underpinning that moment. We begin, though, with, well, a story that is anything but. The government now turns its attention to misogyny. Like, one question you could ask is, if it's not too simplistic, why do so many young boys hate women? 40% approval ratings for that Tate character. And as the figures grow and as the problem spreads, it's always mums that ring me. Have you noticed that? Why isn't it dads? How much of this problem could we lay at the feet of men?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, boys as young as 11 could be sent on anti-misogyny courses as part of plans to tackle violence against women and girls. The government's long-awaited strategy will be published this morning. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
Every secondary school is going to have to teach young people about healthy relationships, including consent, warnings that pornography and some of the things that children are seeing online is normalising behaviours that shouldn't be normal. Of course, a lot of that is already taught in schools, but specialists are now being brought in to train teachers on having some of those really difficult conversations.
The safeguarding minister, Jess Phillips, has told LBC that the connotation is clear when protesters call for intifada. Police have made their first arrest since tightening their policy on the controversial chant in the wake of the Sydney terror attack. Two people were detained at a pro-Palestinian demonstration in London last night. Ms. Phillips says the chant is totally and utterly inexcusable.
I'm not sure what other interpretation there is of infitada other than like an uprising, and it's to call for uprising. And look, we've seen what can happen in an environment where the idea of calling people to arms or violence, that is a very real thing that is happening across our country.
The number of people in hospital in England with flu continued to rise last week. An average of 3,140 flu patients were in hospital each day, up 18% on the previous week. Resident doctors in England are taking part in the second day of their five-day strike. The Conservatives say Westminster City Council must be held accountable over claims it wasted nearly £30 million. It awarded contracts to a building firm despite warnings about poor performance and the risk of bankruptcy. The company later went bust, leaving taxpayers with a bill of £27 million. The Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, told LBC it was a catastrophic mess.
I mean, I feel very, very sorry for Westminster residents. There are a lot of people out there who are working hard, doing double shifts, and now they're going to have to pay for the mess that the Labour Council there has made.
The authority says it followed a robust process, but that lessons have been learned. A review for the government's found the farming sector is bewildered and frightened of what might lie ahead. It says farmers see changes to inheritance tax as their biggest barrier to viability. Sir Keir Starmer's insisted he will not U-turn on the measure. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 9,800. That is up 25 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather, cloudy with rain spreading in from the west country, some heavy downpours in places, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
This Christmas at Tesco, 24 cans of Pepsi Max are just £6.75. That's down from £11.50 with your Tesco club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland, ends 31st of December. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10. A very good morning indeed to you. Would you think less of me if I told you that I don't quite get this? And that, given that I have children myself in the very relevant age range, then I really should get it. It's weird how some of the things that we talk about together feel very much part of my life. The cogs have meshed. I speak of things I know, or if I don't fully appreciate them, I take two calls and suddenly a whole world of understanding opens up in front of me. And of all the subjects that really I should have a better grasp of, a better understanding of misogyny among schoolboys, misogyny in general, and misogyny among schoolboys would be one that I would presume, looking at this programme from the outside, I had full understanding of. I know exactly what misogyny is. I don't obviously suffer from it, but I obviously know people who do in all of the most imaginable and some of the less imaginable ways. I have watched children grow up over the course of the last 20 years. Tons of children, boys and girls. And I am aware of the influences that they face and the access that they have to things that we didn't have access to as young children. Most obviously, pornography. Most obviously, violent pornography. In terms of things that might be damaging, things that are likely to be corrupting, things that once seen can never be unseen. And I can imagine, like everybody else can, what impact that might have on young minds moving forward. At risk of sounding a bit like Ali G, is it because I don't have sons? Is that why? Because it shouldn't, it should be the other way. I don't know. Is it because I don't have sons that I don't see what you see? And please God, and I hope, but you can never know for sure, that if they did, they would have told me. I don't think my daughters have been on the receiving end of the kind of conduct and behaviour that I read about on mornings like this one. If I had sons, would I have seen the signs? Would I have seen the signs? Would I have caught myself reeling at a comment over the breakfast table? Would I know that my son was enjoying Andrew Tate videos? A man who glorifies in misogyny. A man who celebrates misogyny. A man who is famous for little else but misogyny. And, of course, various criminal allegations. Would I know if... Is it because I don't have sons that I don't see it? But surely... I mean, daughters would come home with stories. They would tell you things. And listen, you'd be unsurprised to learn. I try to have the conversations. We ask the questions. We point at stories. We have one of those dreadfully middle-class dinner tables where nothing is off-limits and every conversation under the sun can unfold. And I know my daughters... male friends. And they are almost all absolutely lovely. In fact, they're all absolutely lovely. And yet I don't know what they do privately. I don't know what they've seen. I don't know what's changed them. And when I say I don't get it, I just can't answer some of the most obvious questions thrown up by today's news that schoolboys will be taught consent to combat rise in misogyny. All schoolboys will be taught how to respect women and girls to stem the rise in misogyny and reduce sexual violence. Teachers will be given specialist training so that they can give lessons about consent, the dangers of sharing intimate images and the need to challenge misogynistic behaviour. So you can understand bits of it, right? You can unpick parts of it, but you can't unpick all of it. Well, I can't. You possibly can. I'm hoping you can unpick more of it than I can. Otherwise, this is going to be a very strange radio phone-in. 40% of teenagers in relationships are a victim of relationship abuse, and more than 40% of young men hold a positive view of the hideous misogynist Andrew Tate. Every parent, the Prime Minister said yesterday, should be able to trust that their daughter is safe at school, online, and in her relationships. But too often, toxic ideas are taking hold early and going unchallenged. Would it be ridiculous of me to ask what the toxic ideas are? I mean, do we need to go back to brass tacks on this one? Do we need to go back to first principles, to go back to the basics? What are the toxic ideas? And why, and this is a question that I have to phrase a little bit carefully. I'm not going to overthink the phraseology of it, because anybody with a brain knows that I'm not accusing all men of culpability in this process. But why is it almost always mums that ring me? I don't want to put mums off, because you might have better answers to this question than anybody else does. But that's part of the problem to me. I mean, women. Hey, you're going to have to fix this as well. Misogyny among young men, among young boys, and it's a problem that's going to have to be fixed by women, by mums. Oh, come on, when did dad step up to the plate? What are we supposed to do about this kind of thing? Again, is that just something I can say quite easily? Because I don't have sons. If I did, I'd understand things better. What are the toxic ideas? I think that might be my first question today. And the problem with this, part of the problem with this, is I think it's one of those subjects about which you know nothing or everything. Is it? No, maybe it's not, actually. I'm just thinking, when I say, what are the toxic ideas, I could conjure up some ideas. I could conjure up some notions, some suggestions. But when the Prime Minister says toxic ideas are taking hold early and going unchallenged, what are those toxic ideas that are taking hold early and going unchallenged? Because if they're going unchallenged, then you're talking about parents who either don't know or don't care. And because I'm a liberal cliche, I lean immediately towards don't know. If your children, if your son held toxic opinions, if your son had toxic ideas, you would challenge them, right? But you're not challenging them. The Prime Minister told me, therefore you don't know about them. And if you don't know about them, how the hell are you going to challenge them? It's got a touch of the kind of, the bleeding obvious is about it as well. Should we be teaching children? Should we be teaching young boys about the importance of consent and the horrors of misogyny? Yeah, of course we should. But what are we actually teaching them? I'm going to repeat that line, aren't I? I'm going to talk about why I wonder whether this is just because I don't have sons. So that's question number one. The Prime Minister says that toxic ideas are taking hold and going unchallenged. What are the toxic ideas? And why on earth are they going unchallenged? 0345-60-60973. Hit the numbers now. You will get through. We don't need necessarily a 25-minute introduction on this one, although every time I say that, you end up getting one anyway. What's different? Who can tell me what's changed? I'm 53. It's a long time since I was a teenager, but I have two teenagers. Again, they're not boys. What's changed? I think about, I mean, I'm going to be laughed at. I'm going to call it courtship or dating. And there was a sort of sense when I was growing up, I think we knew what consent was. You knew what consent was, but you, I don't know. I sort of remember watching teen movies and things like that where the male, the boy in a heterosexual encounter, teenage encounter, the boy would always want to go further than the girl, and it somehow became beholden upon the girl to either stop him. I think about the Catcher in the Rye scene when Stadlater's in the back of the car and Holden Caulfield's in the front of the car. And it is a sort of distillation of a boy trying to talk a girl into going somewhere or doing something that she doesn't want to do. But again, it's nuanced because it is written as if Stadlater has taken advantage of her and Holden is outraged and disgusted by it. But equally, I mean, that makes consent a slightly more nuanced issue than it might otherwise be. Is it social pressures that are being brought to bear upon the young lady in the back of the car? Is it, because I mean, when I was growing up, remember, I was taught by monks for much of my life, sexual autonomy was not something that women were really permitted to have. We're pretty close to being taught as kids that girls who had sexual desires or sexual appetites were a little bit suspect, whereas boys, it was entirely natural but simultaneously sinful. Yeah, probably best not to go into the confusions caused by getting your sex education from men in dresses who've taken vows of celibacy. That's one for the therapists. But I'm fascinated by what has changed. What do you say to somebody who says, for example, think about Donald Trump boasting about sexually assaulting women, and then think about British politicians describing it as locker room talk? Is that just as bad as what we're now saying young boys shouldn't be allowed to do? Grabbing women by the genitals, grabbing women by their sexual organ, which Donald Trump has boasted about doing on tape. And of course, then you get the usual suspects, including inevitably Nigel Farage, stepping forward to defend it and saying that's absolutely fine. And of course, the line between saying the language is absolutely fine and the behaviour is absolutely fine is impossible to plot. You don't know where that line is. How many people who defend Donald Trump for boasting about grabbing women by their sexual organs would also defend Donald Trump for grabbing women by their sexual organs? Maybe most of them, maybe all of them, maybe none of them. But what is this modern misogyny that I read about this morning? When did Keir Starmer attack Donald Trump for that comment, for that toxic idea going unchallenged? You see what I mean? He may have done, and I missed it. That's not me being glib or sarcastic, but, you know, you're talking about a man who lays on a state visit for somebody who boasts. For me, saying that you go around grabbing women by their sex organs, that to me is a pretty toxic idea that's taking hold and going unchallenged. So what is it that the young people are doing that the old people don't do? What is this newfangled misogyny that is the preserve of teenage boys, but definitely not their dads or the President of the United States or Nigel Farage? What is it exactly that we are supposed to be worried about? Because I think I know what misogyny is. But the way these stories are written, the way these announcements are made, the way these £20 million packages are unveiled makes me think that I don't. What are the toxic ideas that are taking hold early and going unchallenged? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. And, you know, thinking back, I did actually talk to my mum more about this stuff than I did talk to my dad. And that, I presume, if you're lucky enough to have mums and dads you can talk to, I presume that's normal. So maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree again, as usual, when I find myself wondering why this seems to be something policed by mothers. And if you want me to go all in on the naivety, how can someone with a mother they love be a misogynist? I know that's pathetic. But you take my point on some level. What is this new breed of misogyny perpetrated and disseminated by, I wish they were jokes, but they're not jokes if they're taken seriously. You cease to be a joke when someone takes you seriously, whether you're talking about a politician or whether you're talking about a professional misogynist like Andrew Tate. What is this new misogyny? I tell you what, just tell me what it is that raised your eyebrows. The thing you heard a boy say that just made you go, what? I thought I knew my way around this territory. I thought I knew my way around this behaviour. I thought I knew what it was. So I tell a story. I've told it to you several times. I don't know why it resonated so much with me. Again, perhaps because I don't have boys. But you remember, I saw three lads on a bus going back many years now. And one of them was showing, what, judging by the sound effect and the reaction of the other two boys, one of them was showing his two mates some pretty hardcore pornography. And I remember their faces. The one showing it was in his element. One of the ones looking at it was, I think, somewhat half-heartedly going along with it, and one was visibly blanching. One was a bit kind of, oh boy, didn't know where to look, didn't know where to put himself. Those three boys went home that evening, and I think two of them went home changed, but I don't know how they were changed. What are the toxic behaviours taking hold, the toxic ideas, because I taking hold early and going unchallenged. Keir Starmer adds, this government is stepping in sooner, backing teachers, calling out misogyny and intervening when warning signs appear to stop harm before it starts. I'm going to ask you the same question in five or six different ways. What are the warning signs? What is this modern misogyny entrapping our young people? What are the toxic ideas that are taking hold early and going unchallenged? Because, I mean, it may just be that it is the old stories in new clothes. It's the old songs with new tunes or new lyrics, the same old tunes with brand new lyrics. Or it may be that there is something very new and very real unfolding. And I began this introduction by confessing to you that I don't know. And I think that's because I don't have sons. I could imagine a son saying to me, no doesn't really mean no, and me trying my level best to sit down and explain to him that it does. But I could have had 15-year-old mates explaining to me that no doesn't really mean no. I could have read, you know, novels set among 1950s American teenagers exploring exactly the same issue. Is there something new going on? And what are the toxic ideas Keir Starmer describes as taking hold early and going unchallenged. So that's your phone in, 03456060973. If we can get a side order up and running as well, I think I want you to tell me whether or not it is a problem that mums seem to do most of the work in this space. Because I began the morning thinking that it was, but actually I did that and said that before I remembered who I talked to when I reached puberty and who I talked to about changes and who I talked to about girls, and that was actually my mum. So maybe it's not unhealthy or unnatural or inappropriate that mums are... Well, but then again, whoever is supposed to be doing all of the work in this space, I hesitate to say this, isn't doing a very good job because the numbers are apparently off the charts. I think there's enough there for you to get your teeth into, isn't there? But we come, as ever on this programme, from a place of curiosity and in hope of illumination. So answer any, all, or indeed none of the questions that I've just asked. 20 minutes after 10 is the time. 03456060973 is the number you need.
LBC.
'Twas Christmas in Guildford, and Puss was in Boots for the fairest beauty gifts in the land. With 3 for 2 on exclusive new beauty gifts such as White Fox, made by Mitchell and the Beauty Works, Puss found something for everyone. He even found that with every gold coin he spent, he could earn points on his Boots Advantage card. Perfect. Shop amazing beauty gifts today. Gift happily ever after. Boots. 3 for 2 on gifts marked with the parcel symbol. Every third product is free. Offer ends 24th of the 12th, 25. Selected stores while stocks last.
Come in. Shoes off.
What's the Wi-Fi?
Am I streaming the new series I'm binging?
Please, can we listen to something that isn't Christmas music?
Can someone search how to wrap a present?
Everyone, we're going to video call Auntie Audrey now.
Mum, Joe's talking the telly again.
Can we put some cathedral carols on?
Hosting this Christmas? You need the UK's best broadband technology. EE does more.
Full fibre is the UK's most reliable broadband technology. Ofcom's Broadband Terminology Research, March 2023. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
Look, I've never told you this, but I've always looked up to you. In fact, I used to copy your style. You've always been the cool one. Not that I'd ever actually admit that to you. So this is my way of saying, I know you'd pick something way better than me.
Gift cards are available in-store until the 24th of December and online, even on Christmas Day, because sometimes the best gift is letting them choose. This Christmas, if you can't find the words, find the gift. John Lewis.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 22 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the news that the government will be teaching or providing a package to teach schoolboys consent and to combat the rise in misogyny is, it's a bit like sort of, yeah, oh good, carry on. But I want to stop for a moment and wonder what that means. What are these new, are they new? Right, well, you know, I've asked the questions a million times. Let's start hearing some answers. Angela is in Sydenham. Angela, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks. I love listening to your show. Also really pleased you've brought this up today, because I think it's a really area of concern. So I'm same age as you, a year or two older. I grew up with two brothers who went to a boys' school in the 1980s. Not a boarding school like you, but a pretty posh grammar school. And I, you know, I think they've got pretty traditional, wouldn't say misogynistic ideas, but, you know, they're sort of, I struggled with it when I was young. You know, I was made to do the ironing and iron their school uniforms, you know, that kind of thing, right? Yeah. So I've got two sons who are 18 and 19, grown up in London. They've both gone to mixed schools, mixed primary, mixed secondary by choice.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want them to be like my brothers.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm concerned about their attitude towards women. And
which ones?
They're good boys. They just have a negative view of young women and or some young women's behaviours. And I consider myself to be a feminist. I've got feminist books on my bookshelf. Like to be a good role model. I work full time, always have done. So we're a very open household. We talk about a lot of stuff. And my concern is, where is it coming from?
Well, but my concern first is what is it? So I fully accept that they're good lads, but what are the things that they have said or done that display the feelings you describe, that display, that inform the fears that you're sharing, Angela?
So, yeah, so if you ask them about consent, yeah. You know, they sort of roll their eyes and say, yeah, we've done that at school, you know, of course I know what that is.
Okay.
You know, like,
that's okay, so far, that I'm fine with that. I could be wrong, but that doesn't seem troubling.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I don't see them exhibiting poor behaviour either. You know, they go out socially, they've got friends of both sexes, all the rest of it. But it's when you sit down and actually talk about the bigger issues, the Andrew Tate conversation, yeah. That's when it gets tough, because, you know, one of them, young one particularly, will say, yeah, but he's got something to say, Mum.
Right.
You know, and you know, and...
What does he have to say? I mean, I don't know if you interrogate him like I would, a caller to the programme, but immediately my mind there goes, what does he have to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really tough conversation to have as a parent, because they don't want to have it.
Right.
They're like, shut up, Mum, I don't want to talk about this. You know, it's just boring, and, you know, you're a feminist and blah, blah, blah. But what's it about? I don't know.
Okay.
And I guess that's what I'm calling you. I watched Men of the Manosphere. I don't know if you've seen that.
Right.
It's a BBC Three documentary. I think it's something to do with power, and I think it's something to do with they feel a bit beaten up or misplaced.
Yeah.
They don't really know who they are. So I think... I don't really know.
No, that's fine. I mean, that is why... I mean, you're in a similar position to me, albeit that you've got boys and you know there's something not quite right, but you can't pin down precisely what it is.
And I try and talk to them, and I try and say, can we talk about this? Because it doesn't feel healthy, and it feels like... And I fear that you're getting all your information from YouTube.
Yeah, and of course that adolescent shutter, and that's not new either, is it? So I don't want to talk to my mum about this. Maybe when they were 13 they could have done, but when they're 18 and 19 it's the last thing that they want to do. But
been a hard line throughout their secondary education. Every time I've tried to have the conversation they just shut down.
And then they go online and are exposed to stuff that would have been unthinkable in our day when we were their age, being exposed to people with you know, fancy cars and opinions that are straight out of the Stone Age. As I understand it, they're lured in by the bling and then seduced or gaslit into the misogyny. And you're not going to... How is a mum or a dad supposed to deal with that? And here's another thought as well. It's not what Angela intended when she rang in, but is it too late when they're 19? Do you have to get them when they're 10? And what is it that we're talking about? Exactly. 0345 606 0973. Helen is in Bath. Helen, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi. Yeah, first time caller, James. Thanks.
Okay. It's only me.
So, yeah. I was phoning because it was the bit that you said about Keir Starmer supporting teachers.
Yes.
Around tackling misogyny. And just my experience, my kids are both... my son left school last year, but I've got an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old. And I think... schools full of misogyny from teachers.
Crikey.
Yeah, and I think that needs tackling. I don't think it's recognised as such. But,
can you give me examples? I mean, because Angela couldn't give... I know this is not a criticism, because in a way it proves my point about not knowing exactly what it is that we're talking about. But can you give me examples of that? Because, I mean, I'd need some, really.
Yeah. No, so... So my son, for example, when he was about 13, 14, I think, was in an argument with girls, and there was lots of name-calling from both sides.
Right.
He was literally cornered by two TAs, a male and a female, who told him that girls call boys names and it's basically water off a duck's back, but when boys call girls names, it stays with them forever, so he needs to stop, but there's nothing about the girls stopping. So that kind of pushes boys towards that more toxic kind of, well... You know,
that's not an example of a teacher being misogynistic, though.
No, sorry, that's one of the examples that I gave. So one of the examples of a teacher being misogynistic is my son getting told off. And it was by a female teacher who he got on well with, and she was giving him a dressing down.
Yeah.
And it was going fine. And then a male teacher strode in and decided to take over. There was nothing, there was no aggro going on. And completely undermined her and made the situation loads worse.
And well, that's and not... I mean, that, again, is... very familiar. Every woman listening will recognise that moment, that behaviour, and many men would as well. It's not new, is it? But it's...
Well, it's still there. But then there was, like, my daughter, so she was getting sent pictures of, boys were sending her pictures of their genitalia,
okay.
And she didn't feel able to sort it out because she didn't have confidence that the school would take it seriously, but also she would have to still be in classes with them afterwards because this was kind of widespread.
So some schools would come down on that like a ton of bricks and some schools wouldn't, or at least some children would feel that their school wouldn't, and if it did, it might make life worse because you'd be the one that had got them suspended or you'd be the one that had got their mates into trouble.
Yeah, I informed my daughter's school one day. She came up, she showed me in the morning, there was... it was on Instagram or something, I think National Rape Day. And she came, she's like, Mum, you need to have a look at this. And I was horrified and I phoned the school and I was like, you need to know that this is going on today. So then I got a call back thanking me and suggesting that I didn't let my daughter have access to social media.
Okay, now that is a big brick in the wall that I'm trying to build today. So oddly, it cuts both ways. It actually justifies calls for teachers to do more, but it also informs your fears that they are not the best placed people to do it, which is why they'd need to be fair to the government, they'd need to be specially trained and they'd need to be coming at it afresh. But the school... I mean, that may be the best way into elements of this. If your daughter is being sent pictures of boys' penises and being alerted to the fact that some men and boys are celebrating National Rape Day, what should the school do? So we can say, Ellen, they should not suggest to you that you limit your daughter's access to social media. And I appreciate you've only been on the radio for 3 minutes and you may not have asked yourself this question. What should they have done?
I think when you're talking about maybe they're not the best place, I think absolutely they should be the best place, but I think it needs a lot more training.
Yeah.
And I think there needs to be a much wider consideration of what we're teaching and what we're talking about and also what we're role modelling as adults.
Well, I think that is what they are announcing today. But I, you know how annoying I am sometimes. I want an actual thing. Not just train. What should the... Maybe neither of us know. In that very specific example that you've given us, the juxtaposition of pictures of penises and National Rape Day celebrations, what should the advice be? What should the training teach the teachers to do in that situation? Because I don't know, and I don't think you know either, and it's your daughter.
Yeah. But I think teachers definitely need to have some training on looking at where misogyny lies in schools. Maybe that's happening, I don't know, but I don't...
Well, we're both turning into Daily Mail columnists. We're thumping our desk and shouting, something must be done, but we don't know what it is, do we? Something must be done! But what?
Read that.
And that's why we need more detail of what is being announced, because it's going to get worse, not better. You've got AI deepfakes, you've got countless online harms. The difficulties of fostering healthy relationships will have lifelong ramifications. Helen is the perfect caller. A mum who's there, right in the middle of it, dealing with it. And neither of us know what the correct response would have been. And I think, obviously I have fun with Idiot's Corner. Some subjects are inappropriate for Idiot's Corner. But if you're going to send me a message saying it should just be the parents, it's all about the parents, then seriously, put your phone away and go and do some knitting. It's just such a stupid thing to say in the context of a conversation like this. What would the parent do? Tell the school. It's happening at school. It's someone in your class sending your daughter a picture of their penis and encouraging them to celebrate National Rape Day. And you're listening to it on the radio and you go, well, I blame the parents. You're an idiot, seriously. And you're helping nobody. 10:33 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
New figures show the number of people in hospital in England with flu remains at a record high. An average of more than 3,100 patients were being treated each day last week. That's up 18% on the previous 7 days. Teachers will be trained to spot early signs of misogyny in boys as part of a new anti-violence strategy. Sir Keir Starmer has warned toxic ideas are taking hold early and going unchallenged. The Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, told LBC that a council must take responsibility over claims it wasted £27 million. A series of contracts were awarded to a building firm by Westminster City Council, despite warnings it could go bust. LBC weather, cloudy with rain spreading in from the West Country, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC.
You know what I love about Eurostar? The comfortable seats with lots of legroom. You know what I don't love? Playing hide and seek with my feet. Or playing footsies with my neighbour.
Ouch!
Sorry. Now that I'm on the Eurostar, The only game I'm playing is stretchy, stretchy leg leg, and I always win. That's the ticket.
Eurostar. Together, we go further. Legroom varies by class of service.
Come on, guys, we're late!
Mum, can I borrow your phone quickly?
Are we there yet?
Can someone check we're going the right way on maps, please?
Are we there yet?
Oh, my phone's out of battery.
Here you go, use mine.
Can someone call Nan to let her know we're on our way?
Oh, are we there yet?
Guesting this Christmas? You need the UK's best mobile network. EE does more.
UK's best network. RootMetrics data H125. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
Look, I've never told you this, but I've always looked up to you. In fact, I used to copy your style. You've always been the cool one. Not that I'd ever actually admit that to you. So this is my way of saying, I know you'd pick something way better than me.
Gift cards are available in-store until the 24th of December and online, even on Christmas Day, because sometimes the best gift is letting them choose. This Christmas, if you can't find the words, find the gift. John Lewis.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Sky TV spectacular day of the Jackal, Amadeus and Barney Monroe. While on Netflix you'll see Emily in Paris, plus Stranger Things, so many shows.
Sorry, got a bit excited there.
Get Sky TV and Netflix in time for Christmas for a most wonderful price. Go to sky.com. Sky, believe in better. Requires Sky Stream and relevant Sky TV subscriptions. Minimum broadband speed of 25 megabits per second recommended. 18 plus.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060 973.
I don't know that we properly grasp what misogyny is. And some of this, I don't want to turn into one of those people, like a Stuart Lee character, say, you can't say anything in this guy, you can't say anything anymore without, you can't even pay a woman a compliment without being accused of being a misogynist. But, you know, men of a certain age and younger who sometimes objectify women, okay, are not the same as men who hate women. You make a comment about somebody on television or somebody walking past to your male friends that you would not make to your female friends. That doesn't make you a misogynist. A misogynist is someone who, in some very real way, hates women, denigrates women. And I don't know what signs teachers should be looking for. That's my next question. You just heard in the headlines, teachers will be taught to look for the early signs of misogyny. I want you to tell me what they are. So there's two problems here. Problem one, what are they? Problem two, what does the teacher do when they find them? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. If you want a little bit of help or ways into this, Laura Bates's work is exceptional in this field, and a nice introduction to her and her work would be on the Full Disclosure episode that we recorded together earlier this year. But the reality, the horror, it sometimes feels like she's painting the fourth bridge, in that she finishes one coat and then she has to go back to the beginning and start again. But what are the early signs of misogyny that teachers should be looking for? And you know, because you've seen them. Then perhaps even harder question to answer, what is the correct response? I mean, you just heard Helen describing her daughter getting sent pictures of a classmate's penis. More than one, I sensed. And the school suggests she comes off social media. Boys sending her messages saying, hey, it's National Rape Day, see you later. Can I please speak to the head teacher? Can I speak to the head of pastoral care or whatever they're called this week? I am turning into a Daily Mail columnist. They said, well, have you thought about limiting her access to social media? Have you thought about limiting that boy's access to rape jokes? No, have you thought about limiting your daughter's access to social media? Have you thought about suggesting he stop sending pictures of his penis to my little girl? Have you thought about limiting their access? Listen, anecdotes, anecdotes, anecdotes do not constitute data, but I have a sense that these are parts of the bigger problem, don't you? Charlotte is in Chesterfield. Charlotte, what would you like to say?
Hiya, James. Hello. First of all, absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Well, what a lovely thing to say. Can I tell you something before you carry on? Which I don't. I hope it's not inappropriate. But
okay,
I definitely say it to a gentleman as to a bloke as well. Your accent is my favourite accent in the whole of England.
From Chesterfield.
That little corner of Derbyshire is, it could be for very weird reasons that I may explain another day, but I absolutely love your accent. So you can talk until Sheila Fogarty gets here if you want, Charlotte.
Don't tell me that, because we will be on this phone call for the rest of the duration of your show. I think I upward converged. I went to university in my mid 20s, as a single mother, I had at the time. And there's this thing apparently where you upward or downward converged your accent.
Right.
Depends who I'm with, who I'm talking to,
yes.
How I change my accent. Sorry, I digress, but as did you.
Indeed.
So, a little bit of context. I'm a 41-year-old mother of three boys from the ages of 2 to 17 and a half.
Wow.
And I have a 6-year-old. They are all, well, ones to be diagnosed, they are all autistic.
Okay.
Verbal, apart from the youngest. The reason I say that is because the diagnosis rate, as you must be aware, is increasing. Not as much as it should be, but it is. What people don't understand about autism is they're very tunnel visioned.
Sure.
And I have a point to this, I promise.
No, I don't know you do.
So when my eldest son was just starting to get onto social media, as in TikTok, before even TikTok was a thing, he would be watching videos. And, of course, we just thought they were funny dancers and things like that.
Mm.
They were at first. Then things started to change. The warning signs, as you say, were things like him saying, oh, well, men are stronger than women.
Right.
And I would point that out. No, you're not.
Yeah.
We're all equal. It depends. There's so many different aspects to being strong. Do you mean mentally? Do you mean physically? So those were the sorts of warning signs that we had. But also, can I say, I got married when he was younger, and we've had two more children since. But we co-parent with his father.
Yeah.
And we're not singing off the same hymn sheet. So he'll go to his father's. His father will say one thing. His father was a little bit older than me.
Right.
And has a little bit stuck in his ways on how he feels about women, things right. like that. And sayings like, boys will be boys. No, children will be children. I've had that argument several times with everybody.
Yeah.
And I have my husband. They say it's too late for certain generations. And my husband's listening downstairs, by the way.
Hello.
And he will agree that... say, hi, Craig. He changed. He got brought up in a way... Well, they're very rather conservative.
Old-fashioned.
An
upbringing of
yes, I mean,
the
no.
first caller talked about doing the ironing while her brothers were out playing football. So...
It wasn't so much of those things. He did get treated very differently to his sister.
Yeah.
I know that. But since we've been married, I have... People say you can't change a man. Yes, you can.
Mm.
And for the better.
Yes, of course.
My husband is a huge feminist now. In fact, when I told him I was going to be speaking to you, he texted me to say, please mention the fact that it doesn't matter how old you are. If you hear it on the street, no matter how old you are, if you hear somebody saying something, call it out, say it. This is what we teach our children.
Yeah.
Again, I digress, but...
You don't.
It's an ongoing battle. It truly is.
I'm going to steer you back to your oldest, because this in some ways is the point, isn't it? In that you can do everything you want, albeit without the help of his biological father.
Yes.
But there's not a lot of other help out there. You mentioned strength. I mean, we're talking about a kind of dominion over women that Tate and his mates teach, aren't we? And that extends into sexual activity and it blurs or destroys the concept of consent. That's when it gets really ugly and really nasty.
Absolutely.
But what kind of...
Can I just say, with regards to consent, I was telling, is it your producer or your researcher? I didn't mean to offend her.
Assistant producer or assistant producer?
So she was a lovely woman anyway.
Yes.
she agreed with me about the YouTube video that we showed our eldest many years ago now.
Yeah.
And it really, it had a huge impact, I would say, and we still talk about it today. And it's about, I don't know if you've ever heard it, it's It's quite humorous, but it makes the point very clear, and it's very good for young teenagers to understand in a way that...
I think I know where you're going,
but
you tell me.
You offered her a cup of tea.
Yes.
She doesn't want the cup of tea, but she did want the cup of tea earlier, yes, but now she doesn't want the cup of tea.
Yes, it's very strong.
But if she's asleep, but she wanted the tea, yes, but now she's asleep, don't give her the tea. Obviously, yeah. We're not talking about a cup of tea, we're talking about, you know, some form of sexual activity, but it's done in such a way that, like I said, it is slightly humorous.
No, it gets through, doesn't it? It reaches parts.
It's fantastic, but then you have Trump and Farage, you know, and this is such a global problem, and it's sweeping over here with name-calling from Trump calling a lady a piggy.
Yeah.
Farage saying, listen, love.
Yeah.
You know, these are all misogynistic behaviours and language.
He called Emma Barnett a lower-grade person or a lower-grade presenter the other day. I mean, isn't it? It's absolutely baked in misogyny.
This is the thing of it. It's not just the teenagers.
Well, that's what I was worried about.
Somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, but how can you? How can a teenager who's looking at the President of the United States of America or the man leading the opinion polls in this country, and you are trying to tell them that they really shouldn't be like this?
Yeah,
and
the leader of the free world is wrong.
Yeah.
Or
Andrew
that?
Tate is always boasting about how much money he's got, which is attractive to young people.
It was a bit of a worry. I forgot completely. My husband has a son that's not my son.
Yeah.
And we did ask him once, do you know who Andrew Tate is? And we don't have much control, unfortunately, over him or what he... That's another issue. But
okay.
we said to him last year, what do you know who Andrew Tate is? And he said, yes. And he did the action of pulling his belt off, pretending to pull his belt off, and start pretending to hit a woman with it. And I was absolutely not just gobsmacked. I was disappointed. I was upset. I was mortified.
How do you even begin to unpack that or unpick that?
Well,
your husband has got part of the answer. Is that you call it? You call it when you see it.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. He does. It doesn't matter what age. We have a six-year-old who's got long hair and gets a lot of abuse sometimes in public areas because people call him a girl.
Right.
And I say, so what? Even if he wants to be a girl, does it matter? You know?
Yeah,
and recently we were in Holland and a bunch of teenage girls were teasing and pushing my six-year-old
right.
boy.
Okay.
And my eldest son, I said, I don't want to go over there because I've got the baby. Can you go over there and talk to those and tell them to stop before I intervene? And he walked over and he said, and he came back and he said, I can't, they're girls. I'm not doing that. And half of me was like, well, no, you still need to stand up for your brother.
And the other,
and
half of me was like, oh, well done.
Wow.
Well done, son.
You didn't want to be aggressive and because you were, you know, 2 foot
well,
taller
you know
than
what,
these,
you know
these
what
girls.
You, well, there it is. You've just nailed one of the things that is not often portrayed very sympathetically, which is the confusion that young men feel. Because they were, you know, their fathers were generally raised in a way that recognised things that we no longer recognise. Recognised difference, recognised power dynamics. So you see these deeply damaged, broken little boys who grow up into hate-filled, angry men like Trump or Tate or whoever it is because they weren't loved. But they grew up in environments where they thought they could make sense of the world by signing up to these things. And so what you've got there is the perfect mixed message. A boy who wants to do the right thing, but doesn't know what it is because he's a boy. He's 2 foot taller than all of them. He can't wade in there and start laying down the law. Charlotte, thank you. Seriously, you covered a lot of ground, but you covered it quite brilliantly. And the questions are beginning to, we're beginning to assemble answers, but the problem of what a school will do, what training a teacher would look like is arguably still the most important one of all. It's 10:48.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Whatever you think of the resident doctors going on strike, the ability to be able to strike, I think, really is very important, even if I disagree with people actually doing it. As much as I disagree with the doctors going out on strike now, they should have waited. I think Kemi Badenoch's call is too far. I wouldn't want to see resident doctors, or actually anyone in the NHS, prevented from striking at all.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally. Every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Tap the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £500,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5pm tomorrow and you could get a call with £500,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822 00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10:51 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Misogyny strategy to target boys as young as 11 at risk of doing harm. And I think quite correctly and quite appropriately, we are wondering what you should be looking for. And we're still not entirely sure. Mums queuing up to share experiences, thoughts and insights, but if this were an academic exercise, I would be covering it in red ink and sending it back, saying need stronger examples, need better examples. And that's not me being a pain in the bum. That is me imagining what it is that the teachers are supposed to be looking out for. So some have gone too far. Obviously, they should be responding better to boys sending pictures of their penises to girls in their class at school. And they're failing. That's not a question of training. That's something else that's gone amiss. Misogynistic adults aren't really brought into this conversation, and that includes, of course, some of the best-known politicians on the planet, on both sides of the Atlantic. Behaviours, access, maybe unintentionally, we've stumbled into the heart of the problem, which is we all know what domestic abuse is, we all know what sexual abuse is, but we don't really know what the manosphere is, we don't really know what misogyny is in this context, or if we do, we don't know what the early warning signs are. Will is in St. Leonard's. Will, what would you like to say?
Hey, James, it's really nice to speak to you today. I just want to say for context, so I'm a psychotherapist. I work with young men and parents each week. I also run a company, so we actually go into schools and we deliver healthy masculinity programs at schools all over the UK, workshops, talks. And I'm a man.
Yes.
And I was a boy at school, and I used to also have experiences online where a masculinity influencer became a father figure to me in my early 20s. So I'm coming at this from multiple angles. And I think what I want to say first and foremost is that it's a very delicate and sensitive thing to go into a school and facilitate discussions on things like misogyny, masculinity, the harmful aspects of this. And misogyny, if we look at that from the aspect of the man box, you know, this kind of culture of masculine norms that teaches boys and men how they should be in the world. Misogyny is so normalized that it's really hard to become aware of as a man and where it might pop up in our own lives. you know, there's a quote that once got said to me. It's like the fish grows up in the water, is born in the water, and is asked one day, how's the water? And it says, what water?
How's water? I mean, to just run that analogy as far as we can, is the water very different from when you were growing up? I mean, it certainly feels, some of the things I hear make it feel or look, sound very different from when I was growing up, and some of the things make it sound identical. What are the new problems and issues relevant to what you describe?
So I think a lot of the ideas are merely amplified with the aggressive messaging of algorithms and technology like social media, which wasn't around to the extent it was when you and I were at school. And then you've also got this sense that gender discourse has drastically shifted in the last sort of around 10 years, we could say. So, for example, masculinity is often framed as a problem to be fixed. And this climate of resentment towards
toxic masculinity is, but masculinity itself isn't.
Sure, but
what's
the thing
the
is,
difference?
when we talk with boys and they hear the words toxic masculinity, I know in a lot of contexts that's used to describe the harmful aspects that masculinity can become. But a lot of people are growing up in a world where they're associating masculinity with toxicness. I mean, even the language within the framing of we need to target boys has this kind of shaming, sort of problem-focused frame.
Well, girls don't send pictures of their penises to each other, do they?
Yeah. So I'm talking about how we engage boys in conversations. Look,
That is interesting, but I'm talking about what signs we should be looking for among the boys to address the behaviours that lead to or already entail abuse.
Yeah. And so I would say, for me, this culture... So, well, edgy jokes, this culture of edgy jokes, I see a lot of it is...
That adds to the problem you described. If you're going to come down on me... or you're going to target me or over an edgy joke, I'm going to feel quite persecuted.
And that's exactly what I'm kind of referring to in terms of how we approach this really matters.
What the behaviours are that should be looked for. If a teacher is telling a mother to take her daughter off social media rather than telling the boys that are sending her hideous stuff to give their heads a wobble and sort themselves out, what behaviours... by boys should teachers be taught to look for?
Isolation is a big one. So if we find boys kind of disengaging, they might feel emotionally isolated, so they're not opening up as much. Perhaps they're disengaged with what's happening at school. Just disengagement is a big one, because if you think if someone's disengaged in the real world, then they might be finding solace online. And that's where the messaging that can be very harmful can often seep in ways that we're unaware of, because the online can be communicated in quite an aggressive way, right, through the algorithm.
And when does that boy re-engage? So when does the influences he's absorbing online come into the... Because you can't be disengaged or isolated and also be abusing girls, can you?
Well, I see this a lot in all the schools I go into, so this is why I think we need more and more men involved in this conversation, because as a man, I'm in a unique position, because I can go into schools and speak from and I can say, hey guys, this is my story, and match up to the man box, this is how I got involved in the messaging online.
And so what was the worst thing you did? What was the worst thing you did when you were under the spell of these characters?
Well, I'm curious about that question.
I'm trying to work out what the behaviours are.
Thing I did.
Well, the behaviours that teachers should be looking for. What were the things you did that should have set off alarm bells among your teachers but didn't?
I see what you mean. Yeah, well, I was acting out. I was being a rebel. I was answering to teachers. I was bunking lessons.
Okay. And with regards to how you interacted with women or girls?
Yeah, I think as I've kind of got older and I've looked back, I've gone, wow, you know, I think I was definitely devaluing women and 100% objectifying women.
But what could a teacher have seen? You know, what would a teacher have seen by way of an alarm bell, or the things that David Lammy and Keir Starmer want teachers to be taught to spot? In your case, what should they have spotted?
Well, my response to that would be, first and foremost, is to ask not why the behaviour... to look beneath the behaviour and see a person as more than the behaviour they're showing,
and
to be
absolutely
curious about that.
But what behaviour should we be looking beneath?
Well, I would say that it's very difficult for teachers and that this can't be on teachers. Teachers aren't necessarily social workers. They haven't been trained in that way to be able to detect.
I mean, again, I feel like I'm badgering the witness, but I don't know what behaviours you engaged in that teachers should have spotted. And the announcement is that teachers will be trained to spot the behaviours. So somewhere between those two positions is a question I can't get an answer to. And it's, I mean, I haven't got an answer to it since 10 o'clock, really, apart from the mother who's little girl was being sent pictures of penises and jokes about National Rape Day. The teachers are going to be trained to spot certain behaviours. What would those behaviours be?
Yeah.
Is the question that I think Keir Starmer needs to answer and that we can't. Which is exactly the problem I worried about at the very top of the hour, in that it sounds wonderful. It sounds great. But it doesn't sound very substantive, and I don't think we know. I just don't think that we are clear on what is old and what is new, what is clear and what is unclear, and what is supposed to set off the alarms. What is the behaviour that is supposed to make teachers or trained professionals break the glass, ring the bell? Intervene, try to help. There's obviously a massive problem here, but until you know precisely what the problem is, you can't possibly assemble a meaningful solution, can you?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the number of people in hospital in England with flu remains at a record level for this time of year. New NHS figures show an average of 3,100 patients were being treated each day last week, but the rate of growth has slowed from the previous 7 days. Dr. Gabriel Scally, a former regional director of public health, says it's difficult to know when we'll reach the peak.
You can't tell with viruses, and you can't tell how the vaccination program has worked. The vaccine seems to be a reasonable fit. We know from elsewhere that a high proportion of the people who have been admitted with flu haven't had the protection of the vaccine.
Resident doctors in England are taking part in the second day of their 5-day strike. A government minister's told LBC that female teachers as well as schoolgirls are facing misogynistic abuse in the classroom. Jess Phillips has been setting out details of a strategy to tackle violence against women and girls. Secondary schools will have to offer lessons on healthy relationships, and some boys could be referred to anti-misogyny courses. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, says taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for a mess at a London council. Westminster City Council awarded contracts to a building firm despite warnings about its poor performance and bankruptcy risks. The company later went bust, leaving taxpayers with a bill of nearly £30 million. Ms. Badenoch told LBC someone needs to be held accountable.
Right now, what tends to happen is maybe a council is fined for failing in a service or something, or they're sued. But again, the people who pay are always the taxpayer. It is not fair.
Westminster City Council says it followed a robust process that lessons have been learned. 7 men have been detained by armed police in Sydney. Police in New South Wales had received information a violent act was possibly being prepared. Officers say they have not identified a link to the Bondi terror attack. European leaders are meeting to make a decision on using frozen Russian assets to help Ukraine. Belgium, where the bulk of the assets are held, has so far opposed the plan over concerns about Moscow's response. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 97.96. That is up 22. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather, cloudy today with some rain moving in from southwest England. Heavy downpours in places, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
This Christmas at Tesco, get 12 bottles of Birra Moretti for just £12. Down from £17.50 with your Tesco club card. Tesco, every little helps. Drink aware 18 plus. Majority of larger stores ends 31st of December. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 11. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we turn our attention next to a story that Natasha brought to our attention yesterday. It receives rather more coverage today. 26 contemporaries of Nigel Farage have signed a letter together doing two things, telling of their dismay and anger at his response to the allegations of teenage racism that have been growing over recent weeks, and also their disappointment, well, a keenness for him to apologise. They, as I told you at the time, see him as lying about their motivation. But the denials caused dismay and anger and compelled us to come forward. I'm going to read you elements of what this letter says. While we agree that no one should be judged in later life on the basis of what they have said or done in their youth, those seeking high office need to own their past and demonstrate honesty. Your denials have caused dismay and anger and compelled us to come forward. None of us has taken lightly the decision to speak up. It has been deeply troubling to revisit our memories, let alone to share them with journalists and the broader public. However, what disturbs us is less what happened years ago, hurtful as it was, but rather your refusal to acknowledge your past behaviour or apologise for it. In the letter, they call on Farage to, and I quote, make it clear that you have renounced the racist, anti-Semitic and fascist views that they claim he expressed repeatedly while attending Dulwich College in southeast London. And he's normally, whether you like him or not, quite a slick political operator, which makes the official response from a spokesperson for his party, not from him, a little odd. They said, these latest attacks are a naked attempt to discredit reform and Nigel Farage. Well, except they're not. These people, these men are literally saying, please just acknowledge and apologise for what you did to us. And then we can perhaps all move on. But people will know a little bit more about you or who you used to be, and they can answer for themselves the question of whether or not the boy makes the man. You think back to our caller from Chesterfield, who was explaining that you can change, that men can change. Humans can change, so why doesn't he just say that he has? I don't know the answer to that question, but I think it is really interesting. And part of the answer may be that they are, I think, yet to sack one of their mayoral candidates after it emerged that he had said Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy should, quote, go home, end quote, to the Caribbean. So if Farage were to apologise for saying that when he was 17 or 18 to a nine-year-old boy at his school who was black, his parents came into the UK from Nigeria in the 1950s, so a black British nine-year-old who 17-year-old Farage told to go back to Africa on at least three occasions, if he won't acknowledge or apologise for that, if he did acknowledge or apologise for that, would he have to sack this mayoral candidate? How can he possibly leave this mayoral candidate, Chris Parry, in post, running as the party's candidate in the postponed Hampshire and Solent mayoral election? If he were to apologise for doing it as a 17-year-old, how could he possibly keep a grown man on his candidate's roster in 2025? That's just one theory. The signatories to this open letter are also exercised by these attempts to deny or dismiss their very detailed testimony, which, of course, in journalistic terms, it's double-sourced. Somebody makes an allegation or somebody makes a claim, you shouldn't really go to print with it unless somebody else has corroborated, unless somebody else says that that happened. I mean, this isn't fully covered by that observation, but Farage hasn't produced a single person who will call these people liars. All he's done is claim to have communications from people who say they never witnessed any of this stuff, which seems to me to be such a patently absurd position. I'm surprised that a normally slick political operator even bothered to make it. Because I don't know what you've done this morning, right? I don't know what you've done this morning. In fact, just think of one thing you've done this morning. So it might be having breakfast. You might have dropped the kids off at school. You might have caught the bus to work. You might have washed the car. You might have done a little bit of Christmas shopping online. Just think, seriously now, I want you to think of one thing that you have done this morning. And I'm now going to say that you didn't do that, and I have a letter here from somebody who says they never witnessed you doing that thing, and therefore it could never possibly have happened. That's about as far as his defence against these hideous allegations and accusations currently goes. I have a letter. I can't tell you who sent it, but they went to the same school, and they say they never witnessed any of the things that 26 people say that they witnessed and that happened to them. And because this person, who I can't name, but he went to the same school, says that he never witnessed it, then I can categorically claim that it actually never happened. I mean, that is, again, for a normally quite slick political operator, that's an incredibly stupid position to adopt. Unless, I suppose, you're hoping that the people that you're trying to keep sweet with this position are even stupider than the position you're adopting. So, he can't keep this candidate on the roster if he apologises for telling a black British 9-year-old when he was 17 to go back to Africa, because this character on the roster is still telling a black British deputy prime minister to go home to the Caribbean. That would be one part of it. We have recalled, they write, the verbal abuse you regularly directed at a number of pupils of Jewish, black and Asian heritage, as well as loudly and proudly proclaiming your high regard for fascist leaders and organisations, from Hitler to Mosley, from the Nazis to the National Front. Now, I'm pretty sure that Nigel Farage should have no problem at all in saying that he may have said things as a schoolboy that he obviously resiles from now. He could categorically say, I would no longer claim to admire Adolf Hitler. He wouldn't even make him say, I no longer admire Adolf Hitler. He would simply say, it was banter. I was joking around. Who here, as a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old, a 17-year-old, an 18-year-old, who here didn't claim that Hitler was right? Oh, yeah, that's tricky. Because nobody did. Except, reportedly, him. But that, even that doesn't stop him from saying, I no longer believe that. Or, I never believed that, but I may have said it, and obviously, I was being an idiot. And that's where, perhaps, as with sometimes the analysis of extremist politicians, psychology overtakes politics. Do you think it might just be a psychological inability to say, I am not perfect. I was wrong. You can deny that you did it, even as contemporaries queue up to say, no, you categorically did. Another person claiming that he burned a copy of the school roll in 1980 because it contained more Patels than Smiths. Well, I wouldn't do that now. We all did crazy things as schoolboys. All right, nobody said Hitler was right, except me. But I don't believe that. I didn't believe it then, and I don't believe it now, and I'm very, very sorry for any offence caused. And he can't really do that anymore, because he claimed that no offence was caused. You can see why these people are not letting it go. I imagine, and I've spoken, as you know, to some of them, spoken to Peter Otegi, one of the recipients of the vilest abuse, by his account, and of course corroborated by other contemporaries. I think they just thought he'd say, okay, that was then, this is now. So why won't he? Why won't he? Some of the things that the racist apologists or the anti-Semitic apologists are saying is why are these people only coming forward now? I think Farage or some of his cronies might have said that, to which the answer is they're not. These allegations are old. These allegations were in Michael Crick's biography of Farage. Some of these allegations are in my last book, How They Broke Britain, where Nigel Farage gets a whole chapter. These allegations are not new. Some of them are new because I think people were worried that their schoolmates who had come forward were being denigrated and quite possibly defamed by supporters of Nigel Farage, and therefore they wanted to say, no, look, let's be absolutely clear about this. These lads are telling the truth. So we're going to come forward as well. We're going to add to the weight of evidence because they are trying to deny it. So there's your easy answer to that question if you're thinking of making that argument. A, they're not just coming forward now. Many of the allegations have been in place for quite a long time. And B, the newer allegations are a direct consequence of the failure and or refusal to apologise for the earlier ones. And even his attempts, even his squirming, has been uncharacteristically unslick. To deny that it ever happened, and then to claim that nobody could remember, and then to concede that it had happened and that you could remember and everybody else was wrong because you remembered it differently, and then to concede that actually it had happened, but no offence had been caused. I don't know what the latest position is now, because you can't find the fella anywhere. They seek him here, they seek him there, they seek Nigel Farage everywhere. He normally spends more time in radio and television studios than all the Dimblebees, me, Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Nick Robinson put together. You can't get him out of the studio for love or money half of the time, but not anymore. Three things he's required to answer questions about. One, his former protege, close friend and party leader in Wales, who it turned out was taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge. Two, the continuing investigation into whether or not the funding of his campaign in Clacton broke electoral rules. And three, the 26 contemporaries from Dulwich College signing an open letter yesterday simply asking him to acknowledge and apologise for what he did to them. The letter writers also say that to dismiss their memories was to misunderstand the exceptional nature of his behaviour to them and the hurt they claim it inflicted. You have questioned the reliability of memory, they write, but abusive and hurtful memories stick, and we have never forgotten. Each of us has separately given similar and consistent accounts of you at Dulwich. These memories paint a vivid and undeniable picture of you. The group adds, the accusation that we are politically motivated is false. We represent a broad swathe of professional backgrounds and political opinions. Most of us have had no contact since we left Dulwich. Until writing this letter, we have not acted as a group. We have neither plotted nor conspired. And to address the apologists claiming that this is motivated by anything other than a desire for acknowledgement and apology, they add, in response to claims that they've only spoken now because Reform is leading in some opinion polls, this is not true. It's the lies that people cling to rather than simply say to him, why don't you apologise and acknowledge what you've done? According to 26 of your own school friends. So that lie there, why are they coming forward now? They respond to it directly. This is not true. I'll say that again for the avoidance of doubt. This is not true. You must know this is not the first time a number of us have contributed individually to accounts of you at Dulwich. Ready? Examples include a 2013 Channel 4 news bulletin, a 2016 report in El País titled Hitler Was Right, an open letter published in The Independent in 2019, and a 2022 biography of you by Michael Crick. I had no new allegations in my book. I simply repeated the ones that were already well known, and my book came out 2 years ago. So the idea that this is new is a lie. Not a misunderstanding, not a misapprehension. It's a lie. Unless he managed somehow to be unaware of a 2013 Channel 4 news bulletin about himself, a 2016 report titled Hitler Was Right about himself, an open letter published in The Independent in 2019 about himself, and an entire bloody biography written by Michael Crick and published in 2022 about himself. So why won't he apologise? That is a question. I am something of a student of his hideousness, and I thought he would have done and then hope it would go away. I really did. I presumed he would play the, well, who here didn't claim that Hitler was right and tell little black boys to go back to Africa even though they were born in Britain? And of course the response would be, well, I didn't. But among many of his supporters, including his mayoral candidate in Hampshire, the response would be, well, I still do that. I was telling David Lammy to go back to Africa or to go back to the Caribbean just the other day, Nige. So he could claim with some support that this was not exceptional or extraordinary conduct in the 1970s, and he obviously would like to disassociate himself from it and disown the comments that he made back then. So why won't he? Any answer you've got, as long as it is, you know, falls within the laws of libel, really. Which I'm not sure Richard Tice did, actually, when he accused Peter Atege of lying. And that's part of the reason why these people won't go away. You can't call someone a liar when they are adamant they're telling the truth and when they have revisited their childhood trauma in the hope of or in the expectation of acknowledgement and apology. That's all. That's all they're asking. They're not asking him to resign his political career. They're not asking him to do 10 Hail Marys and an Our Father. They're not asking him to self-flagellate upon the steps of the House of Commons. They're not asking him to spend the rest of his life working with the homeless. They're not asking him to make a massive donation to a refugee charity. They're not asking him to do anything whatsoever other than apologise and acknowledge what nearly 30 of his contemporaries remember him doing. So why won't he? The ultimate opportunist in political terms, a man whose relationship with the truth is notoriously strained, a man who has never really been unduly bothered about exaggeration or embellishment. He pretends, for example, to be outraged by young children who don't have English as their mother tongue, despite the fact that his own children don't have English as their mother tongue. So it's not as if he operates according to a very strict moral code that this would somehow require him to breach. Why won't he just apologise for this? I honestly don't know. And I honestly want to hear your answer to that question. He's not being asked to do anything other than apologise for things that he originally claimed he couldn't remember. But these guys can. These guys categorically can remember it. So why won't he just apologise? 0345-6060-973 is the number that you need. That's the question I want you to answer. So it can be political. It can be cephalogical, if that's the correct deployment of the word. It can be psychological, personal, professional, whatever it is. Here is a man accused of absolutely hideous conduct in his youth by an extraordinary number of contemporaries who could more or less make it go away by apologising or acknowledging. I don't think even the biggest Farage fans are clinging to the notion that it never happened anymore. There's just too many people recalling it and too much commitment to getting their story out there. So that maybe that's part of the answer. Maybe he thought that they would be able to denigrate them all as liars. So that would explain the first 2 weeks of not apologising. It would explain Richard Tice going on the BBC, and I'm pretty sure defaming Peter Ategi. But that didn't work, because they kept coming out of the woodwork. He's thinking, well, there can't be any more of them. I mean, car, crikey, there can't be any more of them. But lo and behold, there is. So maybe that explains the first week or the first 2 weeks of not apologising. It's going to go away. We'll be fine. Call them all liars. But they're not going away. So why won't he apologise now? Has he climbed so far up the mountain of denial and deceit that he can't now climb down again? Because I think he probably can. They'll forgive him anything. He couldn't quite shoot a man on Fifth Avenue and not lose a single vote. But his supporters aren't really troubled particularly by some of the things he's accused of doing in his teenagers, so why won't he apologise? Hit the numbers now. You will get through.
This is LBC.
The Lotto £15 million jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve.
You heard that right. Lotto's £15 million jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Exactly. Must be won.
And very exciting news, it could be you.
Me?
Yup. As long as you have a ticket, you're in with a chance.
Well then, I'd best grab a ticket.
Lotto's £15 million jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve, or thousands of you will win a share of the prize. Get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Prizes rounded down to the nearest pound. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a tub of Quality Street chocolates for just £3.95. Down from £4.50 with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco. Every little helps. Majority of larger stores, Quality Street 550 grams, ends 24th of December. Club card or app required.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 22 minutes after 11. It's a story that hasn't been picked up by the newspapers or journalists that routinely fluff him. It used to be Boris Johnson, but Nigel Farage has successfully inserted himself into the space that was once dominated by sycophancy towards the worst prime minister this country, well, the second worst prime minister that this country has ever seen or hopefully will ever see. I think Liz Truss just nudges into the lead on that one. So you can't expect those journalists or broadcasters to go near this, but 26 school contemporaries of the leader of Reform yesterday signed an open letter telling of their dismay and anger at his response in recent weeks, or indeed his lack of response, to their recollections, to their allegations. And all they really want is apology and acknowledgement. Why? Why won't, and if you think he shouldn't apologise, why won't he at least acknowledge and say, I'm not going to apologise because I can't be held responsible for my actions, although obviously other people who were 15 when they did things should be stripped of their citizenship, but I'm Nigel Farage, so I should be held to a different account. I do, however, acknowledge the upset that was caused to these people, and I regret it, but I'm not going to apologise. He won't even do that, and I don't know why not, and I'm hoping you do. Vanessa's in Glasgow. Vanessa, what would you like to say?
How are you, James? I think there's a few reasons. First of all, the last 10, 15 years, Farage has tried to suggest that he is an underdog. So that underdog status that I'm standing up to these people for ordinary Brits, admitting that he is the bully would damage that underdog status. The second thing is that politically, then, that makes him appear weak because, again, his underdog status has been, I'm standing up to establishment politics, and by apologising, he'd be capitulating to those establishment political powers that he wants to portray himself as being above.
But these aren't establishment political powers. The establishment has not gone anywhere near this. The establishment owns the Daily Mail. They're buying the Daily Telegraph. They think he's wonderful. I mean, what is this mysterious establishment you speak of, Vanessa? Because at the moment, it's just 26 former school friends.
On the face of it, yes. But in the face of his supporters, this idea of of emotional trauma, because you can see a broken arm. You can't see emotional trauma.
No.
And it's been portrayed as they're politically motivated in an attempt to damage the credibility of the victims. And if it's politically motivated, why? It's because he looks to be a leader of the country in the coming years.
Yes.
Months. Who knows?
And part of his stick has always been, you know, the former commodities trader who went to public school and is bankrolled by various billionaires. He's a real anti-establishment figure. I mean, even Boris Johnson claimed to be anti-establishment.
But this underdog status is I've been standing up to these people and I'm above these people because I don't engage in this and I don't apologise for what I believe. That's damaged by admitting that he himself is the bully.
Well, this is the thing.
I think most importantly, I genuinely don't think Farage believes he did anything wrong. And the reason being, if you listen to what he is saying, I never directly racially abused anyone. He associates bullying as being solely physical harm. He does not accept emotional trauma as being a thing. Or a thing that can last as long as 49 years. And the problem with that
He wanted Joe Brand to be arrested for doing a joke on a comedy show about him. That didn't involve any physical harm.
No, but it feeds into his victim narrative.
Of course.
So the problem is, for me anyway, looking at this, and I have been quiet, I've been watching what's been unfolding. It reeks of the bully trying to put a timeline on their victim's healing journey. And he doesn't get to do that. And for us as the electorate, we need to be informed as to, one, what he believes, two, what he has done, and three, how he would inflict his beliefs onto us and our children.
There are two camps here then, aren't there, really? I mean, there may be more, and we'll come up with splinters in the course of contemplating this, but there are two camps. There are those who really want him to renounce the racist, anti-Semitic and fascist views that his contemporaries are recalling or recollecting or are alleging, because they really want to believe that he has renounced the racist, anti-Semitic and fascist views. That's camp one. And then there's camp two that he thinks wouldn't want him to renounce the racist, anti-Semitic and fascist views that his contemporaries claim he expressed while attending Dulwich College in South East London.
Yeah, but I think it's more than that, though. I think for a lot of bullies, they will come out and talk about their intentions. Their intentions was not to cause harm. But your intention doesn't mean anything when the impact of what you say or what you do has genuinely hurt people. And that is what he fundamentally doesn't understand about why they are coming out and why they consistently speak out about it.
Yeah, I mean, I said don't be shy about going psychological. But if it's as Peter, who joined us a couple of weeks ago, alleges, he sidled up to him and whispered Hitler was right in his ear, and gassed them, sometimes adding a long hiss to simulate the sound of gas chambers. Are you really arguing that he wouldn't even recognise now how wrong that was then?
I think he knows it was wrong. But by admitting it to the public, it damages his underdog status that he has been cultivating for the last 15 years. And it damages the idea of being anti-woke, that the idea that your words can cause harm, or you're just being snowflakes.
Yeah, it's there, isn't it? I think we've got a lot of bricks now, but I don't personally have the mortar to build the edifice. There must be more to it, but a lot of what you say makes sense, a lot of it resonates. But I would have thought that the self-interest and the self-preservation would trump, if you pardon the pun, the need to deny, or the absence of empathy, or the need to keep the underdog status, the underdog myth inflated, or the victim narrative inflated. He must be calculating somewhere that it is better for him not to acknowledge and apologise than it is for him to acknowledge and apologise. And, I mean, it may be that it comes entirely from psychological flaws, but normally the political calculus is, albeit one informed by extremism and jingoism and xenophobia and the rest of it, the political calculus he's normally much better at. So he is possibly calculating that the number of people who don't particularly care about him renouncing the racist, anti-Semitic and fascist views that countless contemporaries claim he expressed at school is the only constituency he needs to care about. Is he honestly thinking to himself, well, look, I'm never going to get... Because this is what he apparently said about... And he used the N-word, according to the man that founded UKIP, Dr. Alan Scared. He said, there's no point trying to go after the N-word vote. The N-words will never vote for us. Is he putting these people in that category? There's no point trying to go after the people who want me to renounce racism, anti-Semitism and fascism, because we're never going to get their vote. I can't quite believe that. He doesn't honestly think that the polling he's enjoying at the moment consists entirely of people who are comfortable with racism, anti-Semitism and fascism, does it? That's why I'm confused. Because A, I don't think it does. I think there are people currently telling opinion pollsters that they would vote for his party who are repulsed normally by racism, anti-Semitism and fascism. Although some of the voices that are very articulate, very clear and very loud on the issue of anti-Semitism have had absolutely nothing to say about this, which is strange, but not as strange as the fact that he will neither acknowledge nor apologise for what an extraordinary number of contemporaries are now attesting that he said and did. Why? Why won't he apologise? Here's Thomas Watts with your headlines.
The number of people in hospital with flu remains at a record level for this time of year. New NHS figures show an average of 3,100 patients were being treated each day last week. Teachers in England are to be given training to identify harmful behaviour in boys. It's part of a government strategy to halve violence against women and girls in a decade. Interest rates are expected to be cut to their lowest level in almost 3 years. Most economists think the Bank of England will reduce borrowing costs to 3.75% at midday. LBC weather, cloudy today with rain spreading in from southwest England. Some heavy downpours in places, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prep for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
This Christmas Eve, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Yes, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve. There's magic in the air, so get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
At Lidl, we've got the freshest veg this Christmas for only 8p each. Get British parsnips, sprouts, swedes, 1 kilo of carrots and 2 kilos of potatoes. Oh, and shallots too, at 8p each. You're going to need a bigger colander. Lidl, more to value.
Offers valid 18th to the 24th of December, subject to availability, selected stores, GB only.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
11:34 is the time. Where does it lead the rest of us? I mean, do you just conclude that Farage won't apologise because he is confident that his supporters, all of his supporters, don't care about him being anti-Semitic, fascistic and racist at school, according to nearly 30 contemporaries? Is that the calculation? Because that's the bit I really struggle with. I just think he's a sort of, if you like, a smoother operator than that, a more cynical operator than that. He doesn't honestly think that everybody currently minded to vote for his latest outfit is comfortable with the idea of voting for. So why won't he just, I don't know. I do not know. Colin's in Belton in Lincolnshire. Colin, what would you like to say?
Hi, morning, James.
Hello, Colin.
This is a bit of an odd one, but I think he's playing the Steve Bannon playbook, which is never apologise. And I think that there's a thing going on with this, because what happens is, if he keeps quiet, keeps his head down,
yeah,
and then the news moves on,
yeah,
he's gotten away with it. Now, I've realised personally, and I have a confession, James.
Go on.
I stopped listening to you.
To me?
And I stopped, yep.
What? Get up and go. What? How dare you? That's all right. You're back now.
I stopped listening because as the lamppost botherers started to put flags up in the streets not far from my home,
yes,
I thought, I give up.
Okay.
I give up. I went to the 1978 Rock Against Racism concert in Manchester. I used to chase the National Front down the street, and I thought we were done.
Right.
And what this Bannon-esque type approach does to people like me is it makes me go, what's the point? He gets away with it again. Trump gets away with it again. Farage can say what he likes. And the accumulative effect of having that tactic, and I think it is a genuine tactic, is that people like me, who spent most of their life trying to fight against this stuff, feel like, what's the point?
And you know that the owner of the Daily Mail's wife has given £50,000 to his party, and that the people who routinely tickle his toes, albeit that he's keeping his head down for a while, they'll be back tickling his toes in the new year. And those of us who naively thought that there were some lines you couldn't cross in public discourse in this country are constantly presiding over the rewriting of those lines, the redrawing of those lines, and every single time you think that we, in quotes, are better than that, up pops Nigel Farage to prove that we, in quotes, are not.
Yeah, and it degrades opposition. Eventually,
so why did you come back? Or is this just an accident? Did you turn on the radio? A lot of people listen to me by accident, Colin, judging from my inbox. So what brought you back?
What brought me back was actually thinking this through and realizing that me giving up is the very one thing that people like Farage would love for me to do.
You can't stop. You can't stop, can you? You can't stop sticking up for what is right when the people who are wrong seem to be winning or seem to be prevailing. And I think we're seeing that unfold in the other side of the Atlantic as well. So why then? So it is literally, if I apologize, I look weak, I dilute the views that I expressed back then, which are still being expressed by members of my party, most obviously this candidate in the postponed Hampshire and Solent mayoral election. How on earth can I apologise for telling a little boy to go back to Africa, even though he was born in Britain, without also sacking my candidate who told David Lammy, who was born in Tottenham, to go home to the Caribbean? There's too much. It's like a Pandora's box. A floodgate would open if he apologised for things that a lot of his supporters actually agree with.
Yep, and it'd give me hope.
Yeah? That's interesting. Well, I'm glad you're back. I really am. And don't forget, there's lots of other things. There's Mystery Hour. There's Woke Watch. There's Unhinged Headline. Lots of fun that we can have while also holding the line, while also standing firm against the ancient hatreds that are on the march at the moment. And speaking of ancient hatreds, I thought that perhaps it would be the gas chamber jokes, that Hitler was right, the anti-Semitism that caused him the biggest problems. But it was a very good piece by Jonathan Friedland in the Jewish News last week about the apparent silence coming from corners that would normally be expected to have an awful lot, to quite rightly an awful lot to say about the idea of a prominent politician having this kind of conduct or these kind of allegations all over his past. But no, I mean, there we are. So what I mean by that is the people who are saying to David Lammy that he should go home to the Caribbean might be able to forgive 17-year-old Nigel Farage telling a 9-year-old boy to go home to Africa, even though he was born in Britain. But you'd have thought that the Hitler stuff, the gas chamber stuff, the anti-Semitism stuff would have merited a very different response and added to the necessity for an apology. But apology comes there none. Thank you, Colin. Welcome back. Sean's in Belfast. Sean, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello.
So, I think there's a few things really to touch on here. And I think the first thing that you have to look at is Nigel Farage's career in general. Because Nigel Farage has pretty much had a lot of these aspersions made against him from day one. It's not the first time he's had a touch with racism allegations, and it'll not be the last. Mm. But I think the problem that we see now is that as this is starting to gain a bit of traction, if he accepts some of these allegations now and does apologise for them, I think then the problem he's going to have is he adds some legitimacy to the fact that he is a racist, or at least those allegations.
But also it sets a precedent. So everybody else that comes forward in the next 3 years with memories of him being a massive racist, or allegations of him being a massive racist, or a Hitler fanboy, or an anti-Semite, I suppose he can't deny being a massive Vladimir Putin fanboy, because we've got that on tape, but the rest of it has a degree of plausible deniability. But if he apologises for one instance of this, then he could be spending the next 3 years apologising for others.
And he pretty much opens the floodgates, because look, Nigel Farage has made a career of jumping from party to party, whereas he's actually got some legitimacy now in this party in Reform.
Yeah.
So he really has to make the most of it at this point. And if he starts to get bogged down now with these allegations like he has in the past, he can't really just jump in the same way, because he's kind of going to tar himself with the same brush he has every other time.
So there's the defence is not a strategy. There's the, you know, never explain, never apologise. In fact, Bannon went further, didn't he? Steve Bannon suggested that you should let them call you racist. You should sit with the allegations. I think I've got that clip actually somewhere of Steve Bannon doing that. But I think that's my favourite answer so far, is that it sets a precedent. And that, you know, what if Alan Sked were to come back out with his memories of Farage disparaging black people by using the N-word to describe them, and then people start demanding that he apologise for that, which of course doesn't admit the defence that I was just a schoolboy, and anyway, no one can remember. It's the bloke who founded the actual party.
And I think on top of that too, you know, it's not just Nigel Farage here with allegations made against him. He's also had a career of associating with people with very similar allegations. So when we're talking about opening the floodgates, it's that, yes, okay, he might have these allegations that he might just be this slippery Mick like he has in the past before, that he can, you know, manoeuvre away from it, but there's a lot of people around him that can be connected to him with, you know, not too dissimilar allegations. But I think that's one thing. I do think the other thing for him too is that Nigel Farage is very, very clever at being able to recalibrate a lot of these disputes towards that sort of media behaviour rather than personal action. So a lot of this is as well, it's this new political climate that we're in, that he's lived in for a long time, but that has been mainstream nowadays, that is, you know, playing towards the base. And just like we said before, don't apologise, because you don't need to, because at the end of the day, you'll be able to manoeuvre out of it one way or another, and really trying to, you know...
While you are in the good graces of the media, the right-wing media, you just need to sit it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because there are three things, really, that explain his very, very odd radio silence at the moment, or very uncharacteristic radio silence. There's nothing odd about it. He'd be asked about this. He'd be asked about the inquiries into his election funding in Clacton, and he'd be asked about Nathan Gill a lot more. There's a lot more that I'd like to know about how on earth he could have been the effective boss of somebody who was taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge without even noticing. And so... all of those things he can sit out. But if he were to acknowledge and apologise, then the clock doesn't ever run down, does it? It never gets to zero, because all it would take is for somebody else to come forward, whether from his time in the city or from his early days in UKIP or from his time private conversations that he's had since becoming well known. Somebody else comes forward with more allegations and the clock fills up again. It's back up to...
Exactly.
So he can't ever apologise or acknowledge...
And I think it's very easy to also, you know, frame a lot of the critics as this kind of elite conspiracy rather than really engaging on any of those facts at the same time.
And sometimes I worry that we overthink these things, but on this occasion I don't think we are overthinking it. I think it's fascinating. And, of course, in Nigel Farage's defence, he recently claimed to have received a letter from a Jewish former pupil who said that he hadn't witnessed any of the behaviours described by lots of people who presumably wouldn't have expected people who weren't there to remember things that happened when they weren't there. I also, and it's very important to do this for legal reasons and all the rest of it, I do have a full statement from Nigel Farage in response to all of these allegations.
Bernard Manning.
It's 11:45.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
When someone as rich as Pep Guardiola falls, as the Sun calls it, victim of Labour Chancellor Rachel Reeves' brutal budget tax attack, you have to take notice. Closing down a restaurant that's been open for 7 years, despite earning £20 million, he and his partners have said, we can't keep it going. It's just no longer sustainable. So is that the reality for business? Dave's in York. What business do you run, Dave?
It's a fish and chip shop, an established fish and chip shop.
How long have you been running?
I've been in 40 years. The business has been around 60 years. I'm just paying everything out. I just cannot keep it going. Unfortunately, I've got to make three staff redundant today. I've done everything by the book, but I just cannot take the hit anymore.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at 2. We said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
This Christmas Eve, the £50 million lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Yes, the £50 million lotto jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve. There's magic in the air, so get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
At Lidl, you can get a whole Christmas dinner for eight for under £1.50 per person with all the trimmings, including fresh Birchwood British whole turkey, potatoes, Yorkshire stuffing, sprouts, carrots, parsnips, and of course the gravy. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. Fresh turkeys on sale 19th of December. See lidl.co.uk/lbtv for details.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
11:48 is the time. It's just, I normally can see the calculation. There are a few more transparent public figures than Nigel Farage. You can see the dishonesty from space when he claims to be troubled by people talking foreign on trains. He doesn't mention that his own wife and children talk foreign at home. And he claims to be troubled by the number of primary school children, most recently in Glasgow, who don't have English as their mother tongue. He doesn't mention that his own children don't have English as a mother tongue. When he claims that he wouldn't want to live next door to people of a certain nationality or background. Even the Sun newspaper back in the day could pretty much call that out as racist, but he just moves the target. So it used to be Romanians, and then it was Muslims, and then it was Poles and other Eastern Europeans. It's hard to keep up with what it is today. But I can't work this out. What is the calculation here? Is the calculation that the massive majority of people who currently support him share the racist, anti-Semitic and fascist views that he expressed at school, according to a dizzying number of his contemporaries? Is the calculation that they won't care enough? Or is the calculation something more venal? Something more pathetic? Just an inability? He should, by all logical calculations, acknowledge and apologise to his former contemporaries, to his contemporaries. But he just can't, because there's a sort of psychological blockage on that level of empathy and self-knowledge, that level of self-realisation. It could be all of the above, couldn't it? It could be all of the above. There's certainly no shortage of people who are supremely comfortable with the kind of ideas that he expressed, because one of them is running for mayor in Hampshire and Solent, telling David Lammy to go home to the Caribbean, despite the fact that he was born in Archway. So that might be part of it. You know, lots of people share my views, share my racist, anti-Semitic, fascist views. Therefore, why on earth would I acknowledge and apologise? But even if he did, would he lose them? Is that what he's worried about? And he might have to sack this candidate for doing in adulthood what he did in the sixth form. But he wouldn't lose. He'd probably still vote Reform, wouldn't he? Even if he wasn't a candidate anymore, if he's motivated by racism or by a belief that David Lammy isn't British, then what other party is he going to vote for? I don't know. Anyway, 10 to 12 is the time. Mystery hour. I've forgotten how to speak. Mystery hour up next. Including, of course, you're running out of time to get your hands on the new Mystery Hour travel-sized edition game in time for Christmas. And listen, there is definitely someone in your life who wants it for Christmas, and if you can't think of who it might be, then it's probably you. Julian's in Forest Hill. Julian, what's going on here?
Oh, hi there. Hi there, Jim. James, sorry.
That's all right. You can call me whatever you want, Julian. What's on your mind?
Okay. Yeah, so I just was listening to what you were saying, and I think, initial comments about why can't he apologise. I think it's a bit naive to say he just needs to apologise because that would all be accepted and everything. Because actually for him to apologise is a huge thing. Because he's weirdly, he's always claimed that he's not a racist, believe it or not. And that, it's a long time ago, but saying these things are really disturbing.
Yeah, it doesn't change the fact, does it? He claims he's not, even though back in 2014, even The Sun described his comments about Romanian neighbours as being obviously racist. You can still deny it, even as the evidence is insurmountable. If your position is to deny it, then saying, well, all right, it was true once, but I didn't really mean it, is actually a much bigger deal than some of the analysis today would allow.
I think many people, including a lot of his supporters, would be very shocked if he admitted to those things. I still think.
Do you?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
We disagree here. Because I think that is the one thing on which almost everybody would agree, is that it's entirely plausible that he did it.
Well, it's
I mean, you think it really is.
Been called out, and I think this is why it's a problem for him, because when was the last time he's actually had people stating, he said this, you know, he said these things, which are obviously blatantly racist things.
Yes.
When did that last actually happen? You know, he's had people in his party saying, people that he's always apologising for people who have said these things, but not him outright.
And that gives him a little bit of plausible deniability. But if he was on the same hook as all of the people he's had to chuck out of the party, although I don't think they bother doing that much anymore, then it would make his position. But he doesn't normally care about looking like a hypocrite or looking like a liar. So why would he suddenly care now?
Because these are absolutely statements from people, very solid statements from people that knew him then, and there's a lot of them. And it hasn't happened before. I think it's a problem for him. I think it's actually a real problem.
He
doesn't quite know what to do about it.
That would make sense, because it is a very uncharacteristic period of self-imposed silence that I suppose we should be careful what we wish for, shouldn't we, Julian? But I can't remember him being quite so quiet ever, actually, but certainly not in recent months or years. That line that Julian alludes to, I remember it. The truth is that I have done more in my career to defeat extremism and far-right politics than anybody else in the UK. How do you even pass that? If you would do that in an essay and they just stuck at the end of that quote, Nigel Farage. The truth is that I've done more in my career to defeat extremism and far-right politics than anybody else in the UK. Discuss. How would you get past, like, line one? This is a load of old toot. This is a load of old toot. What on earth would you put in the second line? From my time fighting the BNP right up to today. That's going to come as news to the BNP, isn't it? Do you remember standing shoulder to shoulder with Nigel Farage against the BNP? What an absolute character. And then, of course, he denied ever saying the things that he was reported to have said, which is another great characteristic of his, which is why perhaps this is problematic. I'm, by the way, I'm not convinced it is a massive problem. I just think it's important, as Colin reminded us, if you care about things like fascism, racism, anti-Semitism, then you have to carry on caring about them, even when a surprising number of people around you seem not to, or at least not to care enough. Thank you, Julian. Luke's in Mansfield. Luke, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, Luke.
I just want to say that not only is he not apologising for this behaviour that's obviously happened, we're almost celebrating.
I think legally I'm required at this point not only to say that he obviously denies that it happened, but also that he has offered a very full and frank account of what actually did happen.
Bird of Manning.
Carry on.
Okay, we'll leave that one there. Not only are we doing that, we're celebrating it as well. I live in Nottinghamshire, and this is, you know, the county where they've reform are in, and they've started hanging flags from lampposts. So they spent $75,000 on hanging flags from lampposts. And it's the first time in my life I can honestly say I've ever looked at the flag of my country and being ashamed and being embarrassed by it because of behaviour like this. So, I mean, I'm driving around and I'm getting to a crossroads. I'm driving over a pothole that's nearly popping a tyre on my van, and they're spending £75,000 to represent this entity, which, in my opinion, is a racist entity from what has gone on in the past, from what Nigel Farage has supposedly said. It's just disgusting, if I'm honest with you. It's just horrible.
Just to be clear, you're not describing the flag as a racist entity. You're describing this movement and the flag has been as it was back in the 70s when he was busy fighting against fascists and presumably the National Front as well. Then it was co-opted by the far right. There's a widespread sense that that's happening again. Why do you think that? I mean, so an apology is an admission of defeat in a way, then? Is that what you're saying? It kind of... he's got people marching alongside him, and if he apologised for what he allegedly did as a schoolboy, then they would not actually be marching in unison with each other anymore, because he'd have somehow detached himself from some, or if not most, of them?
I think so, yeah, and I think that's the kind of crowd that reforms attract him, which is why I'm saying I'm ashamed of what this flag's representing. I mean, I've had to come off Facebook and social media because of the openly racist comments on there from... Yeah. from members of the public, reform supporters. I just cannot look at these forums when reform is mentioned and any of this stuff.
And the racism is off the charts. And if he apologised and acknowledged it, would they turn on him, or would they just, would the gloss disappear slightly? They'd think he's as bad as the rest of them with his political career. I can't quite see it, but maybe that's his fear.
Possibly. I mean, he'd lose his status as the leader of this entity, wouldn't he? I mean, that, because who would they follow?
You know, the one that left the party because it wasn't racist enough for him. I can't remember his name, or it wasn't vile enough towards immigrants. So probably follow him. Luke, thank you. That's two. Those two accents, the combination of Chesterfield and Mansfield. And oddly, I was born in Derby, and there's probably a reason why I have a sort of inbuilt soft spot for those accents, given the likely accents of the nurses that would have looked after me when I was very first born. Only worked that out the other day. Thank you, Luke. It is coming up to 11:59. I'll squeeze in one more. Jean's in Broadstairs. Jean, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, Jane. Reason Farage won't apologise is because he is being mentored by Steve Bannon, as the previous caller said, Trump and Musk. He wants to look good in their eyes. He knows if he apologised, because they never apologise for anything that they have said, past, present, future, it just doesn't come in their psyche. He is mentored by them, and that's who he wants to look good for. He doesn't care about, and I don't understand why people don't get it, he doesn't care about UK. He really doesn't. It's Trump, it's Putin, Steve Bannon and Musk and
opportunism.
Those type of people.
Yeah, I mean, that actually shoots my opportunism, Fox. The idea that it would. So the electoral calculus is one answer. The idea that he thinks it would harm him to apologise. It would do him more harm than good to apologise. And the reasons for that include Gene's analysis. I think my favourite answer so far is probably the precedent that it sets, actually. That is something that hadn't occurred to me. If I apologise for this, I'm going to have to apologise with every other recollection, every other allegation, everybody else coming forward, whether they've got the support of 25 school friends or not. Some of these allegations are old and authoritative. I mean, who wouldn't, for example, trust the word of the man that founded UKIP and then left it because it got too racist? I don't know, but there's a few answers there to the question. I think we'd probably all agree he's not going to apologise, though. And that, of course, adds insult to the injury that he caused as a teenager.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, latest figures show the NHS is continuing to feel the pressure from rising flu cases as doctors continue their strike. An average of 3,140 flu patients were in hospitals in England each day last week. That's up 18% on the previous 7 days. Conor Meehan is an associate professor of biosciences at Nottingham Trent University.
I think we have a couple of problems coming together. It seems to be early because there's a new variant or kind of strain of it, which seems to be infecting people a little bit easier. But we also see a lot more cases in children, spreading it between children, and they'll be bringing it home, and that'll be coming into the adult population from there as well.
The Bank of England has just cut interest rates to the lowest level since February 2023. Policymakers have decided to reduce the base rate by a quarter point to 3.75%. There are fresh calls for councillors in Westminster to be sanctioned over claims they wasted £27 million. The council awarded a contract to a building firm despite warnings about its poor performance and bankruptcy risks. The company later went bust, leaving taxpayers with a huge bill. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, told LBC that someone must face the consequences.
If people make catastrophic decisions and they don't suffer for it, and by that I mean being held accountable, being penalised in some way, being sanctioned, possibly being sacked, right now what tends to happen is maybe a council is fined for failing in a service or something, or they're sued, but again, the people who pay are always the taxpayer. It is not fair.
Westminster City Council says it followed a robust process, but that lessons have been learned. Plans to tackle violence against women and girls include anti-misogyny courses for boys who show problem behaviour. Safeguarding Minister Jess Phillips has been setting out details of the long-awaited strategy. She's told LBC that both girls and female teachers are being targeted in schools.
I'm not going to teach teachers how to suck eggs. They know, and they're already telling us what they can see. So the kind of behaviours that we are talking about are the things like the sharing of intimate images whether people are showing sexually aggressive behaviours.
European Union leaders are holding crunch talks on providing new funding for Ukraine. They are trying to agree a deal to back a 90 billion euro loan with frozen Russian assets. But Belgium, where the bulk of the assets are held, has so far opposed the plan over concerns about Moscow's response. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 97.98. That is up 24 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, cloudy this afternoon, with rain spreading across the country from the West Country. Heavy downpours in places, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 12 is the time. He's right, you know. It is. It's Mystery Hour. It's Thursday. It's 12 noon. It must be the time of week for the only opportunity anywhere on your radio to achieve the sort of satisfaction you can ordinarily only dream of. I'd got that one a bit backwards, considering I've been saying it pretty much every week for 10 years. You'd have thought I'd have had it off pat by now. But anyway, variety is the spice of life. You have a question, a mystery, a conundrum, a riddle, something that you need an answer to, and you are quietly confident that somebody else must know the answer to the question that you need an answer to. And if anybody knows it, then somebody listening to this program will know it. So you ring in with the question, you ask it, and then somebody else rings in with the answer. And somehow, between those two points, between those two positions, the magic lies. If you think I'm exaggerating, you can see it now, live on TikTok. I kid you not, live on TikTok. Hello, TikTok. Live on TikTok. TikTok live. Live on TikTok. That's what you do, right, when you're doing viral content on TikTok. You just say things in a slightly wacky way and then, you know, like and subscribe, all that kind of thing. If you are unfamiliar with this feature, then it does pretty much what I just said it does. In fact, it does exactly what it says on the tin. And speaking of tins, the all-new and very exciting Mystery Hour Travel Edition, a brand-new game. If you got the old one, this is completely new. It's not only an entirely new set of questions and answers, but it's actually a new dynamic as well. You are no longer required to make up your own wrong answer. The game itself provides a right answer and two wrong answers. You can find out more at mysteryhour.co.uk or over at Big Sky Games. And it's actually a really nice bit of kit. Not just pocket size, but kind of got that feel to it, you know? Anyway, don't take my word for it. I got a review sent in this week. I'll share bits of that with you later if you're very, very good. But if you want to win one, then all you have to do, piece of cake, is submit my favourite contribution of the week. Whoever submits my favourite contribution of the week will win a brand new Mystery Hour game. Travel edition. It's in a tin. Terms and conditions apply, and they can be found at lbc.co.uk. So if you want the terms and conditions, do I say smash that like button, Keith, or is that smash that like button? The terms and conditions, if you want to win one, can be found at lbc.co.uk. But if you want to buy several, because it would solve all your Christmas needs, then you go to mysteryhour.co.uk. lbc.co.uk for the terms and conditions. mysteryhour.co.uk for the games. Games plural, because you can, of course, still buy the original boxed edition, like the full-size board game, as opposed to the pocket-size travel game. Oh, what a lot of games. That'll do, I think. Phone lines are open. I usually make a promise about laugh-out-loud moments, but modesty prevents me from doing that every week. What if one week you tuned in and you didn't laugh out loud? Last week was particularly funny. I personally had several laugh-out-loud moments last week. And also, I don't know that... They don't like it when I tell you this, but we did get quite an early rush of questions that were either not very good or we had dealt with relatively recently. So, albeit that you wouldn't have got through 4 minutes ago, you might get through now. Well, you have got a better chance of getting through now than you did at 12:04. I'm only telling you that because it will almost certainly not be true by the time I actually get to the end of the sentence. But as I speak... Don't hold back on the grounds that you couldn't get through a minute ago, because you will get through now. 03456060973. I think that'll do, will it? Shall we crack on? Shall we get it on the... I mean, we've been knocking it out of the park lately in terms of getting every single question answered, but I got... Wasn't there one last week that we didn't get... Anyway, enough. Lawrence is in Brighton. Lawrence, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, Lawrence.
Okay, so I was in the post office the other day sending out Christmas cards.
Oh, yeah.
Outside the UK, some to Ireland, some to France. And when you go in and you send them abroad, you get those little blue stickers that you put on your envelope.
Yes.
That says airmail.
Yes.
And then underneath it says par avion.
Par avion.
Which is French.
It
Very
is.
Good.
Yes.
Why?
Why
not Spanish, Italian, German, Mandarin? Why is it, when you're sending a card from England to anywhere in the world, you put an airmail stamp on... But it also has it in French as well. Do they all go to Paris first and then out? I don't know.
That's a nice question. I mean, presumably the answer is going to have something to do with the notion of a lingua franca, isn't it? The you know, like an internationally agreed language. It would normally be English, though, wouldn't it?
You would... Well, this is it. It's got in both.
So, yeah.
I was standing in the queue, it was a massive queue, Christmas, and I was looking at the little blue stamps, the little things you stick on your envelope, and just bugged me. I don't know why.
Boring answer would simply be that the massive majority of airmail that we have sent historically would be to France, but I'm going to put my money on a form of lingua franca, like a previously agreed convention under which French is the sort of international... language of post. Not just the international language of love, Lawrence, but also the international language of post.
I like it. I'm not sure.
I'd be amazed if that's Occam's razor in action. But how many Christmas cards do you send?
Not as many as I used to. It cost a fortune. £3.30, I think, to send one to Ireland.
I bought a book. It was my mum's birthday earlier this month. I sent her a card. It's pretty much the only thing I send in the post now is cards to my mum and my sister. But but a first-class stamps over £1.
Domestically.
Yeah. How many people know that? And why do you still do it? I'm not saying you shouldn't. It's like a boring phone-in on whether or not Christmas cards are now redundant. But it's still a nice thing to do.
Well, because I get one from them. So.
Yeah, so you feel obliged. Not going to do £3.50 a pop, though, mate. There we go. 12:10. Why does the airmail sticker have French on it? And not, given that you're sending it from England, you can kind of understand why it's got English on it, but why not loads of other languages, given that you could be sending it to anywhere from, I don't know, Cairo to Kuala Lumpur? Thank you, Lawrence. 03456060973. If I tell you a secret, do you promise not to laugh? If I tell you, so, because a few people at this time of year ask why we don't do the round robins anymore. And Ella and I had a chat about this the other day, and oddly, we'd arrived in a similar place without having previously discussed it. And it's just too mean. And that's a really odd thing to have decided, because I used to think they were so fun. We used to have so much fun. You know the things I'm talking about. When people send out like a circular in their Christmas cards, they send it to everyone they know, including people that they met once on holiday 48 years ago. And you've got no interest whatsoever in what was being grown on the allotment or how well their grandchildren have done in their GCSEs or the state of their husband's bunions. Oh, the men's ones are arguably more boring than the women's ones. And we used to have so much fun reading these out. And it's my fault. I led you astray. So I'm not, no beef at all with the people that rang in with them. But when I was just thinking about it towards the beginning of this month, whether or not we'd try and do it again this year, I mean, there's far fewer of them than ever before. But I kind of just, imagine if you wrote one. I used to think, oh, it doesn't matter. What are the odds? of the person who wrote it actually listening when someone else rings in to read out the boring stuff and then we all laugh at it. And that's still true, albeit that the audience is considerably bigger than it was when we started. But what if you just do one and it's never crossed your mind that everybody else thinks it's a bit boring and ridiculous? And maybe it isn't. Maybe I'm the problem here. Maybe we're the meanies. And actually, most people quite like receiving these lovely circulars. And all we've done is try and turn them into it. So that's why I don't do it anymore. And I'm sorry in some ways for the mockery that we brought to bear upon the ones in the past. So that's why. I'm only answering the question of why we don't do it anymore. 12:12 is the time. Sarah is in Parsons Green. Sarah, question or answer?
Hi, it's a question, James.
Carry on, Sarah.
So I was wondering, you know, in like the Renaissance and afterwards, you had different types of coins and money going around.
Yeah.
So some people would have ducats and some people would have florins and stuff. How was the exchange rate determined?
So you mean like you? I love your little casual deployment of ducats and florins. I don't know if they sort of support your point historically, but you'd have people travelling, and the coins that they used at home would not be the same as the coins that they used when they got to their destination, and you didn't have Bureau de Change on every village high street. So how would? How would you swap what you had? I mean, would they... I mean, I don't even know why I'm even thinking
because
of answering
it. Because I was reading, like, stuff like dowries. So people, like, would marry... I was watching The Serpent Queen, which I really recommend. It's great.
The what queen?
The Serpent Queen.
Okay. It's on the list.
It's about Catherine of Medicis. And when she was married to the King of France...
Yes.
They had a dowry, which was in A money. And then they said... We want this in that money. So I was wondering, how did they establish what was more...
Exchange rates. When did exchange rates come about? And what did they do before?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to let you have both of those. I used to be very strict about that, but, you can't answer one without answering the other, really. And I'm really, really interested in that now. What a lovely question. Thank you, Sarah. When did exchange rates become a thing? And what on earth did people do before? 0345 606 0973. 14 minutes after 12 is the time. Clive is in Southampton. Clive, question or answer?
I've got a question for you, James.
Carry on, Clive.
I wondered how did it come about that outdoor workers wore donkey jackets.
And Labour leaders of yore as well.
Yeah.
Michael Foot was famous for wearing a donkey jacket, wasn't he? So what are you confused by? The style of coat or the name donkey?
No. Why they wore them? How did it come about that they wore them?
Nice coats. They're warm coats. There's not a mystery here, is there? I mean, it would be a coat that was issued as uniform by your employer, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't it?
Why was it chosen that it was a donkey jacket?
Well, so you mean why are donkey jackets called donkey jackets?
Well, yeah, okay, yeah.
Well, no, you sound unhappy now. That's not what you want to know, is it?
No.
I can read your mind.
I wondered why a donkey jacket? Why not any other type of jacket?
Can you describe a donkey jacket for younger listeners?
It was a very thick material, and it had like a plastic going across the top.
Possibly leather originally.
Oh, yeah, maybe even leather. Yeah,
across the shoulders at the back, like a panel.
That's it. Yes.
I mean, I'm thinking coal miners for some reason. I don't know why.
My dad was a factory worker,
and he wore a donkey jacket.
He did.
Issued by the employer?
Yes, most certainly.
That's going to be part of the answer. So what is it? So what we want, really, and there's probably a book, is the history of donkey jackets.
Yes, yeah.
And you're not remotely interested in why they're called donkey jackets?
Yeah, I just wondered how it came about,
That's a great question. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Why? What? Who? Where? When? Whether? Whither? Wherefore? Whatever. Why donkey jackets? Where do they come from? Donkey jackets, where do they come from? And the answer, for the avoidance of doubt, is categorically not altogether now donkeys. Lara is in Bristol. Lara is in Bristol. Everyone's shouting no at me. She is. I can see it. It's on my screen. But we're not going to talk to her now because we've got to do this.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the new LBC app.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
This Christmas Eve, the £50 million lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Yes, the £50 million lotto jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve. There's magic in the air, so get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Make this Christmas a jingle belter from well-nice appetizers like Aldi's Himalayan salt-aged smoked salmon to proper naughty desserts such as their melting milk chocolate baubles with caramel sauce. Your table spread will totally slay. Go all fancy with Aldi, specially selected.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 18 minutes after 12. We could have a new feature, Keith, in the new year. We could do Keith's Corner. It's like when you spot a story, it has a peculiar set of circumstances or a peculiar... Keith, the stories that Keith spots are Keith's stories. So we might launch Keith's Corner in the new year. It'll take us 6 months to get a jingle. But anyway, this is from Keith's Corner. This is a story that Keith has spotted and the rest of us missed. I suppose I'm suggesting that you consume a slightly different news diet from the rest of us. Is that a fair comment, do you think? A bomb disposal robot has been sent to deal with a suspicious package at Westminster. It turns out that it was a box of unsent Christmas cards signed by the Communities Minister, Miatta Fambule. I that's just magnificent. And what if you were a recipient? I don't know. Anyway, there you go. So a bomb disposal robot is currently dealing with a box of unsent Christmas cards left in a, presumably by an aide, but for our purposes, left in an inappropriate place by a government minister. That's our first and possibly last ever visit to Keith's Corner. Laura is in Bristol, I told you. Laura, question or answer?
A question, please.
Carry on, Laura.
The question really is, why do washing machines have a window at the front of it? We have like an eight-month-old son, and he's obsessed with watching the washing machine go round.
But how lovely.
We don't, you know, the dishwasher doesn't have it, and obviously in North America, kind of top-loading ones don't have them, so I just wonder why. Yeah.
Well, you kind of answered it unintentionally. Oh. I think you have. I mean, you couldn't, if you were to open a top-loading one when it wasn't empty, there's not any harm done, is there?
No.
And the way that a dishwasher works, even if you've got a blockage in your dishwasher, the water will be largely contained within the bottom of the dishwasher when you open it. But if your washing machine, your front-loading washing machine, hasn't drained properly, and you were to open it, then, you know, it would be flood central.
That is a good point. It's not just to keep our eight-month-old son entertained.
No, but, I mean, it is that well-known song, isn't it? The wheels on the washing machine go round and round,
exactly.
as we all sung to our children.
All day long.
But that is why. So, you know...
Okay, brilliant.
No, you're welcome. Ask me what my qualifications are.
What are your qualifications?
That's a very good question. I think we may have had it before on Mystery Hour, so that would be why I can on this occasion remember it. But it is, I mean, when you think about it, it's obvious, but of course it's not obvious when you haven't really thought about it.
Well, and we're making good use of the child lock, so we don't have to worry about that.
Very important, very important. And there is something soothing about the washing machine going round and round as well. A round of applause for me. Ooh, how much trouble would I get into if I gave myself the Mystery Hour game this week for my favourite? I mean, it would be a little bit on brand, wouldn't it, for me to make my favourite contribution of the week? But I don't know. Let's wait and see. If you don't know what I'm talking about because you're tuning in late, there is a brand new Mystery Hour game and you can get your hands on it, hopefully, I reckon just in time for Christmas. People who ordered it last week had it before the weekend. Some were arriving on Saturday morning. And it's nice and pocket-sized, fits through the letterbox, so you don't even need to be in for the postman to deliver it, like possibly you did with the last one. So get yourself over to mysteryhour.co.uk right now. I must dig out that review. Pam's in Chorley. Pam, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Pam.
Right, so we have got a border collie.
Oh, yes.
She is a rescue dog.
Yes.
And when we got her, she had had her tail amputated because it had been caught in something. It had become infected.
Oh.
So they had had to amputate it. Now, so she has got the normal body border collie markings.
Yeah.
Mostly black. She's got white socks. She's got a white stripe down her face.
Yeah.
But her tail, her stump of her tail is black.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But in the last year, we've had her for 6 years.
Yeah.
In the last year, white hairs have appeared at the tip of her tail, of her stump.
Hmm.
And I want to know if this is genetics. If genetics can tell that this is now the end of her tail and it is putting white hairs on the end of her tail.
How old is she, roughly?
We think she is about 8. And we've had her since she was 2.
What's the average life for a dog these days, for a border collie? These days.
13, 14. I don't think it's changed much, no.
I don't know why I said these days. Oh, okay, so it's not old age then?
No. She's got, I mean, there's nowhere else on her that she's got any, apart from her face, she's got some age whitening on her face.
So why?
But nowhere else.
Why is the dog sprouting white hairs on their stump?
Yeah.
I can't decide whether this is a really interesting question or a really silly one, Pam.
I completely understand that, but she has always been, you know, from her shoulders forward, she is completely black. And she's got this hilarious little stump because she waggles the whole of her bum when she's happy, which is a lot.
Oh, that's nice.
She's very cute.
So there must be a reason. There must be, for all these years, no white hairs, and then all of a sudden, white hairs galore.
Yeah. And I just want to know if it could be, if it's a genetic thing, that somehow genetics recognises the end of a dog's tail. If that's
I think we might be slightly misusing the word genetics at the moment.
Do you think
genetics somehow recognise the end of the tail?
Yeah.
I'm no geneticist, but I don't know that that would ever constitute a PhD inquiry.
Well, I don't know either.
Nor do I. Genetics, the genes, the body,
yes,
something.
The genes, the body.
What's going on?
Something to do with DNA, something to do with...
Yeah, all right, you're on. I mean, you're not, but you might be. We'll see. I mean, really, it is just why. Why is... What's the dog's name? Do you mind me asking?
Her name is Molly.
Molly, that's nice.
Molly the Collie.
Molly the Collie, of course, yeah, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Why is Molly growing white hairs on her stump?
Thank you.
It is 12:25. Final question. Sorry, I'm more interested in this than I expected to be. Do we know what Molly's tail would look like had it never been amputated?
No, we don't, but...
Keith said longer, Pam. Keith said longer. I knew I shouldn't have given him that little boost a moment ago. He's gonna be doing that for the rest of the year now. Go on. We don't know what colour it would have been.
But if you look at any picture of a border collie, if you know any border collies, they always have a white end to the tail.
The very tip of it would be white?
Yeah.
And now you think that it might be like a new tip?
Yeah.
Okay, I like that. All right, so someone might know, although I'd be slightly surprised. 12:25 is the time. Rob's in Bishop Stortford. Rob, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Rob.
I don't know whether this is a terrible question or a great question. I'll let you be the judge. No. I've been sitting on this for over a decade.
What? Okay.
Now, back in the Middle Ages, it used to be that you used to have to be a knight or to fight in a battle, and it was almost an honour.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if there was one specific battle where they decided, actually, we're going to let commoners fight in our place.
Well, I think it might lean towards the silly rather than... I mean, hang on. The commoners always fought. They just didn't have horses.
Yeah, but it was an honour, wasn't it? It was an honour.
Well, who told you that?
Well, my lay understanding of history, I suppose.
It was an...
Used to be, what wars? I'm going back,
yeah.
When it was, when probably the Middle Ages, I suppose, when it was almost viewed that you were an, it was an honour to be a,
it was an honour to be a knight. But I don't think it was an honour particularly to go. I mean, the Crusades? Are you thinking the Crusades? Because we took loads of plebs went to the Crusades.
Yeah.
It was full of plebs. It was full of commoners. It's just led by knights. The knights would be like the generals, and they'd have the horses.
Yeah.
So what?
But was there one specific battle where, well, obviously, as time progressed, those leaders led from the back rather than the front, didn't they?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Now, oddly, and I'm not going to remember who it was, it is known, I can't remember, but it is a matter of historical record, the last time, for example, the English army was led into battle by an English monarch. I don't know why. I've got George the First stuck somewhere in my head.
Okay. Well,
so that sort of answers your question.
Yeah.
But the idea of the knights of the realm, the aristocrats, leading the commoners into battle, that's a good question. But not the commoners replacing the aristocrats. I don't think that ever happened. Because I think probably when we got a permanent army, would it be when we got a permanent army? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was the thing of, at some point they obviously decided, actually, we don't want to risk our lives.
No.
We'll go to the back and let...
I've got Agincourt in my mind, but he led the front. That was crying God for England, Harry and St. George, wasn't it?
Right, yeah, absolutely. This is, so I've sort of, my knowledge of history is, reasonable.
And it certainly is.
That's why I'm sort of wondering whether
we want to pinpoint when the knights no longer led everybody else into battle.
Exactly.
Your actual knights. Your dukes and your earls. So your aristocrats. Yeah. We'll go with your aristocrats who would lead into battle and they get rewarded with castles.
Exactly.
All right. You're on. Hopefully, in the course of digging up that answer, we will remember, or someone will remember, who the last king to lead the British or the English army, I forget which, into battle.
That would be great if we can get that as well.
You're on. Thank you, Rob. Take care. Lovely stuff. It is 12:30. We didn't do a Christmas theme this year because we've done it in the past. One year they made me dress up as Santa Claus. Do you remember that? Before your time. In fact, it was when Michael was the producer, and I should just give Michael a little shout. He'd be embarrassed with me for doing this, but I think it's really important. If you've met Michael a couple of times, he's my producer a while ago now, but he's just received a very important award. He's just received the Royal National Lifeboat Institution recognition. The thanks of the Royal National Lifeboat Institution has gone to Michael, the former producer of this programme, now a crew member of the Dover 7 class lifeboat, RNLB City of London 2, because on the 12th of August 2023, that lifeboat was tasked with the rescue of 68 casualties in the English Channel. And on completion, the boat was immediately retasked to further casualties in the water, 6 nautical miles away. And the citation that Michael's just received, and it's a really beautiful vellum scroll, says the quick reaction, teamwork and determined efforts of the lifeboat crew resulted in their safe recovery. Their actions represent the very best traditions of the lifeboat service, and 3 lives were saved. So I don't know what you were doing in August, but I bet you weren't saving lives. Michael Keown, the former producer of this programme, was, and I am extremely proud to share that news with you. Here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
The number of people in hospital with flu in England continues to rise, with more than 3,140 patients last week. That's an increase of 18% as a strike by resident doctors continues for a second day. Interest rates have been cut to their lowest levels since February 2023. The Bank of England reduced the base rate by a quarter point to 3.75%. And teachers will be trained to spot early signs of misogyny in boys as part of a new anti-violence strategy. Sir Keir Starmer has warned toxic ideas are taking hold early and going unchallenged. LBC weather, mostly cloudy and windy. Heavy and persistent rain for many will move in from the south. This will reach northern Scotland in the late afternoon, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Ow. Ow.
million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Plenty to celebrate at Aldi this Christmas. Quality Food Award Christmas Retailer of the Year 6 years in a row. And which cheapest supermarket of the year 4 years running? That calls for champagne, surely. How about Aldi's Verve Monsigny, winner of the World Champagne Awards 2025? Visit aldi.co.uk/awards for more.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally. Every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at 2. You said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
I was kind of right. It was George II. I'll tell you what, if you wanted to join me in congratulating Michael on his RNLI award, you could make a little donation to the charity. Because they do incredible work. They're staffed almost entirely by volunteers. And there's something, I'm so powerful about that. I don't want to say something very British about that, because it's one of those expressions of patriotism that sounds like it's a bit of a snide dig at other countries. But we have so much coastline. A risk of going full Partridge. Obviously, a lifeboat service on an island nation like this one has a weight and a cachet that it simply wouldn't have in other countries because it doesn't have as much coastline. I always make a point of visiting the lifeboat stations wherever I am in the country, and it just fills me with an almost sort of childlike pride and admiration that a pal of mine and a former colleague of mine has joined up and done such extraordinary work. So if you want to sort of mark Christmas in any way, and you're looking for a charity to support, then the RNLI would be at the top of the list, I hope. Sandy is in Redditch. Sandy, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Sandy.
Okay, so an answer to the question about medieval knights.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so basically, the word knight is a modern term that we apply to it.
Okay.
And in the medieval period, they were called milites, which is the Latin derivation of where we get the word military from.
Do you know, I'd never do this during Mystery Hour, but I'm going to be pedantic. Do you mind?
Okay.
So it's in Chaucer, though, isn't it? You have the knight's tale in Chaucer, a very parfit, gentle knight.
I can't remember what they called it at the time.
Well, that was Chaucer. That was at the time.
But Chaucer, okay. But then Chaucer is quite late medieval.
All right.
And they would have used the word knight. I mean, that's kind of
okay.
Kind of different to the point.
I'll shut up now. Okay, you carry on.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry, thank you.
So basically, a knight means a soldier.
Yeah.
They were a soldier. They come across, they fight for William the Conqueror. They are nobles, and they start like that. But it changes, and by about the 1200s, they start to become less noble, a commoner or somebody not of noble birth or Norman birth can be a knight.
Okay.
And eventually that moves and changes again. You have, the introduction of all the laws to do with how wealthy you look, like sumptuary laws.
Right.
I mean, around that time. The big change, to answer the caller's question, is about the 1350s, under King Edward III.
Yes.
King Edward III makes it a professional army. He realises that the Welsh bowmen are much more effective than British bowmen. He changes the way archers look. English bowmen. And he realises that they can, up until then, there's a law that they have to practice archery. They have to own a bow and arrow.
Yes.
Edward III, I think it is, decides that they have to actually learn to use it.
And that's where the butts come from.
Changes it a bit. So you get all the, yep, archery butts is what they practiced on after a church on a Sunday. It was law that they practiced.
So what about the other bit?
Professional army then.
So that's part of the answer. But what about the being led into battle by aristocrats, by dukes and earls and what have you? Because that would have kicked off probably with William the Conqueror in its most obvious terms. Yeah. When did that stop? George the Second, I reckon, was
arguably,
the king.
Yeah, I would say it's much later than medieval when they actually stopped. I'd even go so far as like it's probably 19th century. I'm not sure because medieval bits I know, but
I mean certainly Crimea. You think of the Battle of Balaclava? That was aristocrats, wasn't it? It was Lord Cardigan.
Well, exactly. We have these interesting conversations in our house, and one of the conversations we had was how the number killed at the Battle of Towton, which is a War of the Roses battle, so 1400s, was about the same as the first 15 minutes of the Battle of the Somme, and how different it is when somebody who causes the war leads them into war, compared to how when somebody causes the war sat in an office in a different country.
That's a beautiful point. I mean, beautiful in the very specific sense of the word. Powerful, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the lions led by donkeys kind of rhetoric.
Yeah.
What are your qualifications?
I have written a book called The Life and Times of a Medieval Knight, which comes out in January, and I was going to send you a copy. I don't know where to send it to.
I can't. I'm so glad I shut up when I did. I'm literally about to start lecturing the person who wrote The Life and Times of a Medieval Knight on the incorrect usage of the word knight in the context of the medieval period.
There is an Anglo-Saxon word that sounds like knight, and they also say that it comes from that. There's different kinds of knights, but a knighthood itself is an award of land and responsibility to the lord, and you get given a knight's fee. So you might have half an eighth fee in one lord, and you might have half a fee for a different lord, and you do your responsibilities, but under feudal system you're responsible for people below you as well as those reporting to those above. So you would look after the land and the people for the lord, and you'd pass the money up.
This is wonderful stuff. And how long was the book in the writing?
To be honest, I've phoned you quite a lot when I should have been writing it. I'm the one who homeschools the feral kids.
Well, you've got your work cut out, haven't you? A glutton for punishment.
Yeah. But it's about 5 years, because it's actually about one specific Warwickshire family.
I was going to say, this is fantastic. Thank you. And it's out in January. Stay on the line. Eleanor will give you the address. I can't wait to read that. I really can't. But also, I'm going
to... quite local to where you came from.
Well, so near enough, because when you said the war of it was the English Civil War more around our neck of the woods, wasn't it, than the War of the Roses. That's Yorkshire, Lancashire. But I shall really enjoy that. You know I will. But also, somewhat, a bit of a special moment. Obviously, what was the title of the book again?
Life and Times of a Medieval Knight, the Geoffrey de Langley and Family.
There you go.
And
written in... Oh, lovely stuff. I love that imprint, that publishing house. And so you're going to get a Ray Liotta, but it's... It gets better, mate. This is extraordinary. Ray obviously is no longer with us, but the Ray Liotta Award continues. And today, Sandy, would have been his birthday. So I think this is the first ever Ray Liotta to be bestowed upon somebody. You see what I did there with the word bestowed?
Yeah.
Yeah, like a knight.
I know, they're actually better than a knighthood.
Well, I can't say fairer than that.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
Happy days. Happy, happy days. Thank you, Sandy, and good luck with the publication. Remind me to give it a nudge when it's actually available and I can push a little bit of readership your way. Adrian is in Doncaster. Adrian, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Adrian.
In answer to your French wording
par avion.
Par avion. Correct, yeah. It relates back to... a global framework that was signed in the 1874 Treaty of Bern.
Yeah.
In so much as all international communications have to fall under and are governed by that treaty.
So lingua franca, so to speak.
Correct, yeah. It was the accepted, obviously, the internationally accepted legalese at the time.
Do we know why?
Why particularly they formed the treaty?
No, why they chose French?
Absolutely not. I just know that it was at the time all international treaties were signed in French.
Yeah, it was about. I mean, well, it's a while after Napoleon, isn't it? 50 years
just
or so.
Just a little while. Yeah, 1874.
But he probably got the. I don't know, maybe the remnants of the Napoleonic Empire or the reach
perhaps,
of the Napoleonic Empire explained.
All I know is that all international mailing agreements, such as TIP and Dangerous Goods by Air, are all still signed off and tied back in French to the original 1874 treaty.
Perfect answer. Qualifications?
I've spent 25 years as an international shipping manager for a large company.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause for Adrian.
Thank you.
That's a vintage mystery, Ali. It's got real depth to it. Thank you. Will is in Camberwell. Will, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
How does a kitten learn its name? I've never been a huge fan of pets, really. Not really needed them, but the girlfriend mentioned recently, should we get some cats? I was like, yeah, go on then. Two lovely cats, 9th of September and 11th, they were born.
Right.
And I've been sat there saying their names, looking at them in their big, beautiful eyes, but they never respond.
Did you hear what I said just before you came on?
I've been listening, but...
I said, this is a vintage mystery, isn't it? It's got real depth.
Yeah.
I said, it's got real depth this week.
You did, yeah.
And what have you just done?
I'm not sure. I
How the kittens learn their names?
Yes. Got a light in the mood, light and shade. What I've got, light and shade.
Everyone's a producer. What are the kittens' names?
I didn't choose them, but one is Mango and one is Potato.
Mango and Potato. They're quite cute names, actually.
They're
hand
great.
On heart.
Yeah.
We met a cat earlier this week called Asteroid Destroyer.
Nice.
I think the fact they're quite similar might be a problem.
I did wonder that. There's lots of O's in there, isn't there?
I think they're picking up on the O's. Mango, potato, and so what happens when you call them?
I mean, well, nothing. I was trying it last night. I've been trying treats and stuff, and they do look at you, but only about a third of the time.
So they're not responding to their name in any way?
Two-thirds of the time, no.
But the third of the time, how do you know they're responding to their name and not just the noise that you're making or the treat that you're dangling?
I don't. No, that's why I figured this must be someone there who's had hundreds of cats and kittens who knows exactly the answer.
So, Tracy's very excited. One of your kittens has the same birthday as her. She sent me that message in capital letters. That's how excited she is.
She's a Virgo, then.
Yeah.
I know, because mine's the same as one of them, but anyway.
I mean, are we confident that they do learn their name? You know what? I'm as boring as you are, Will. I was looking at my dog last night on the sofa, and I was toying with the name thing. I was, like, calling her name really quietly, and then waiting to see whether she was going to turn around every time I made a noise, or whether she was actually going to only turn around when I said her name. And she did. But I think she's responding to the last syllable, like the E or the tone of voice or the E note, because she thinks she's going to get fed or she thinks she's going to go for a walk. I tell her off. She completely ignores me.
Right.
But I don't know her star sign.
Mm.
I wouldn't even begin. Anyway, I'll find out. How do you teach a kitten its name? Is that honestly the question?
Yes, please.
Okay. I can't answer this. I'll give you the money myself.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Training for teachers to spot misogynistic behaviour by boys, behaviour courses for those boys, and measures on consent, photographs and myths about sex and relationships. Quite the to-do list. Can we do it?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to play BetVictor's daily free-to-play guaranteed prize wheel.
What guaranteed prizes does this guaranteed prize wheel guarantee?
The guaranteed prize wheel means you're guaranteed to win prizes, like free bets, free spins, exclusive offers, and cash. Guaranteed.
What was it called again?
The guaranteed prize wheel.
Well, I guarantee I'll give it a spin.
And I guarantee you'll win a prize.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on BetVictor's guaranteed prize wheel. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Opt in and spin the wheel. Rewards expire 24 hours after claiming. Gambleaware.org.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo. The original stuffing. Lovingly crafted since 1901.
Hello. I'm a National Lottery scratch card. You normally see me in the shops, but you know where I'd really like to be? Round yours at Christmas. I'm a great Christmas guest. You can use me as a festive place setting for a bit of fun. And you might even win a few quid. At the very least, I'll distract Uncle Dave from saying something inappropriate.
Oh. Buy a National Lottery scratch card and add some play to Christmas. Gift responsibly. Rules and procedures apply. Players and gifters must be 18 or over.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It is 12:48. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Questions that still need answers. We've done that one. When did exchange rates kick in? And before exchange rates were a thing, how on earth did you use coins if you'd come here from somewhere else? Donkey jackets. Where did they come from? And indeed, why are they called donkey jackets? I've completely blown up my rule, haven't I, about only one question each this week. But that's the beauty of Mystery. I make it up as I go along. Why does Pam's dog, Molly, the collie, have white hairs on the stump of where her tail used to be? She has never had white tails there before, and she's only eight. That's all I've got on the list at the moment. Have we got anything else? Oh, and how does Will train his kittens to recognise their name? 0345 606 0973. Alex is in Banbury. Alex, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
So, I'm a tutor of primary children. It's actually from one of the children that I was teaching yesterday.
Marvellous.
We were looking at money, yes, and writing down, I don't know, £5.50 or something.
Yeah.
And the child said, why do we write the pound sign first? And then I looked at sort of euros and dollars, and we always write that first. Yet kilograms, miles, metres, litres, anything like that, we always write the unit after the number. Mm. And I had no idea why.
No, it's a nice question. I'm thinking it's got something to do with bills and stuff, hasn't it? But if you were sending in a bill for 50 kilograms of something, you'd put the kilograms after the amount and the pound sign before the cost of it. So it doesn't immediately make sense. But this rings a bell, you know. I'm just going to give it a minute and see if anything bubbles to the surface. So I think it might have been answered by a bookkeeper, as you would expect.
Right.
Not a bookmaker. A bookkeeper. No, it's not going to happen.
I remember a while ago, not that many weeks ago, but there was something about why it's an L sign, something to do with weights or something.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that. I think we've had this specific. We may have had this specific.
Oh, okay.
That's fine, though. There's no rules anymore about repetition because we're all too old to remember what we were doing yesterday, let alone 6 months ago or 6 years ago. You're on the board. I like it, Alex. Thank you. Well, does the child want a shout out or not? Do we know? Is it? I mean, or should we just
probably
ask
the GDPR. I probably shouldn't say any name.
No,
kind of thing,
absolutely. I mean, it'd be all right if they were called John, but if they were called Rastapopoulos, then you might have a bit of a compromised privacy issue on your hands. Thank you, Alex. Why do currency signs come before the numbers when you're talking about currency? That's two currency questions this week. I wonder if... No, it didn't, because it was her class yesterday that prompted it. Sometimes one person asks a question about something, and then you think to yourself, I've often wondered about that other thing, which is part of the same subject. It's why I banned etymology questions. I limited it to etymology questions to once a week. In a way, donkey jackets was almost an etymology question. But if someone rings in with an etymology question, you can fill the switchboard with other etymology questions. And although it would be quite an interesting phone-in, an old Mark up in Cumbria would be absolutely in clover, it wouldn't somehow be in the spirit of Mystery Hour. Camille is in Ealing. Camille, question or answer?
I have an answer for you, James.
Carry on, mate.
So, money and money exchange.
Yes.
in back in the days. It's actually really simple. Back in the days, the money was made out of precious metals. So you would have set amount of grams of silver or gold in a coin, and you would travel with that currency.
So you just weigh it. So if I was coming from Brentford to Ealing, and we had different currencies, when I got to Ealing, you'd weigh my Brentford coins.
Yeah, I wouldn't have to. Yeah, absolutely. But you wouldn't really have to weigh it because you would have a stamp of the mint or coin.
And that would be international. That would be internationally understood.
Absolutely. So if you would take pre-1920 coins from England and you would travel to America, they would have very similar sizes in terms of how much grams of precious metals they would have. So really simple. When that stopped, it was probably when they decided to remove all the precious metals from the coins to take the wealth out of the people.
Yeah. And, well, hang on a minute. That's a bit of a conspiracy theory, but I'll let that pass.
Thank you. So it's really simple. So you
and that's where it becomes, I promise to pay the bearer the sum of. clipping as well. Do you know about, you must know about clipping because you're a bit of an expert, I can tell. So you people would clip coins, wouldn't they, back in the day? They'd just clip a tiny bit off it because it would be, if you clipped enough tiny bits off a coin, you had a lot. You had a big bit. And you could,
absolutely.
Qualifications?
But then you would have, I'm just interested in coins. I sometimes collect a little bit of them. And
Are you a numismatist?
No, I wouldn't go that far.
Right.
I wouldn't go that far.
You spoiled my joke,
then. I like coins and history of them.
You spoiled my joke, then.
Oh, thank you.
I was going to go, are you what is it actually called? Can you remember?
No.
There's a fancy word for a coin collector.
I'm not from this country, so I don't know, James.
No, that's all right. I think it's I was going to do this joke, so this is a little joke for you, Camille, that you can use in the future. Hang on, I'm just going to look it up. Would you wait there a second? Talk among yourselves. Thank you, Keith. I'm not going to be able to find it now. It's lovely music. Numismatism or something, is it? Numismatist. Okay, ready. So what I was going to do, Camille, is I was going to go like this. I was going to go, so between you and me, mate, all right, a specialist or enthusiast who studies and collects coins is called a numismatist.
Numismatist.
Did you know that?
I did know that, yeah.
Oh.
I just don't want to spoil a joke.
So. Okay. so the joke would have been, I'd have done this. I'd have said, oh, Camille, you are a specialist or enthusiast who studies and collects coins. You are therefore a you're a coin collector, aren't you? Oh, thank you. That was very polite. It's 12:54. Round of applause for Camille, the numismatist. Numismatist. David's in Chelsea. David, question or answer?
It's an answer for you.
Carry on.
Donkey jacket, quite simply, when people used to work outside, like market traders and people like that, they used to carry goods on their shoulders, and the shoulders of their jackets used to wear out.
Yeah.
So they put a leather strap across the shoulders like a donkey seat, like a saddle. And that's why it's called a donkey jacket.
Oh, I like that a lot. There is an alternative answer, which a few people have submitted, about working on donkeys. Not the animals, but the is it pumps?
I wouldn't know.
What are your qualifications?
My father used to wear one, but I mean, apart from that, it's not really a qualification, but he used to wear one, and that was his reasoning on it.
That'll do. I like that. Round of applause. I meant on the qualifications. I mean, it's got a beautiful symmetry to it. You almost will make it true, even if it wasn't true. And thinking of things that are true, I forgot when I was talking to Sandy in Redditch about the role that the Earl of Dartmouth played, of course. I don't know if people are familiar with this story, but the practice she described as a consequence of Edward the Third, was it, who made archery practice compulsory, so you'd go down to the butts and you'd shoot arrows. One day it was raining during archery practice, and the Earl of Dartmouth was training his troop of archers, and it was raining, so they all went back indoors, and they wanted to carry on doing the archery, but they couldn't because they were indoors. So one of the Earl of Dartmouth's retainers, one of his yeomen, made a tiny little target, made a little tiny archery target, but, well, not tiny, about I don't know, a foot and a half wide, much smaller than a big archery target. And then he whittled some tiny little arrows as well, using his skills. I think he was a blacksmith, so they had little metal pins on them. And they started throwing the tiny arrows at the tiny target because it was raining outside and they couldn't do archery practice. And that was the Earl of Dartmouth's troop operating somewhere in Kent. And that is where darts comes from. That is what is now called darts, you see. The Earl of Dartmouth's people doing the archery practice got rained off. They went indoors. They made a little kit for indoor archery. And it was called darts in honour of the Earl of Dartmouth. There's a similar story about sandwiches, actually, but you've probably heard that one before. Have I given David a round of applause? I have. Ned's in Bradfield. Ned, question or answer?
It's an answer, sir.
Carry on, Ned.
Cats.
Yeah.
So, round of applause to you. They are very similar, potato and mango.
Yes. Just for people tuning in, they're very similar cat names. They're not very similar foods for anyone doing recipes later.
yeah. Don't swap one for the other.
God,
yeah. Roast mango on your Christmas lunch isn't going to be very nice. I'll give you that. So, potato and mango are quite similar in terms of syllables. As you said, cats like, if it's kitty, Leo, like this.
Yeah.
So they respond better to heart. They love baby language.
Well, it's a bit of a meow type sound, really, isn't it? It's closer to a cat language noise.
Yeah, very much so. So I've had my life ruled by two Burmese cats for about 10 years. And we had a lady that used to look after them. She used to clicker train them. She was a dog trainer and a cat trainer, horse whisperer. And she trained one of them basically to his name, with a snack, and he used to run up and down and come when he was called. But I can't do it because she went Leo, and my wife can do it, but I can't go Leo, and he doesn't respond to it at all. So there's your answer.
Well, it's not an answer. Yeah, what does Will do then? He needs names, shorter names, and a higher pitch.
Yeah, essentially for them to pay attention to it.
I can't do potato. Mango might work. Mango!
And then potato. You know,
potato doesn't work.
It's too similar. But all my cats have got 1,000 names anyway, so they'll end up being called God knows what. But yeah, he needs to raise up his voice
and
higher pitch, and then they'll get more attention.
Well, the only one we haven't done is the dog one. We haven't done the Molly's tail, have we? Oh, well, we're out of time. Round of applause for Ned. Tough shout this week, but I'm going to give it to Sandy in Redditch because she was such fun and she's been working so hard on her book, The Life and Times of a Medieval Knight. If you missed any of today's show, that's the last mystery hour of the year, by the way. If you missed any of it, you can listen back on our free global player or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date, apparently, on all the top stories and opinion, but also put your news categories in the order you want and pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily. Gareth Southgate this week, it's a bit of a doozy. And the best bits from this show. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sorbitt will be with you at 4. And it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
And save the best to last. The government has just finished announcing in the Commons its strategy for violence against women and girls. It's a big to-do list. £1 billion for victims of male violence, including safe housing. That's the adults. Training for teachers to spot misogynistic behaviour by boys. Behaviour courses for said boys and measures on consent, photographs and sharing them, myths about sex and relationships. It's an awful lot to consider here. It says something, doesn't it, about where we are, that we need this strategy at all. So is your daughter safe at school, on the street, in her friendship group, in her sports or dance club or wherever she spends her time? Are women safe? We know that, broadly speaking, the answer to all of those questions is not safe enough. It is quite the to-do list. Can we do it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The Bank of England has cut the base rate of interest to 3.75%, its lowest level since February 2023. Five members of the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee voted for a 0.25-point cut. The other four members voted to maintain the base rate of interest at 4%. Financial analyst Danny Hewson has told LBC the vote was always going to be close.
Inflation at 3.2% is still way above the bank's 2% target, and it has proved to be pretty sticky over the last year. And service inflation is one of the things which will be really concerning members of the Monetary Policy Committee.
The government has put forward its plan to tackle violence against women and girls after being criticised for a delay. The safeguarding minister, Jess Phillips, has been addressing MPs in the Commons this lunchtime.
Last year, one in every eight women was a victim of domestic abuse, stalking or sexual assault. Every day, 200 rapes are reported to the police and many go unreported. Behind every one of these figures is a woman or girl whose life has been shattered. And behind every crime lies a perpetrator who all too often gets away scot-free.
As part of the measures, all secondary schools in England will have to teach students about healthy relationships to tackle misogyny. The Tories say the government needs to put more police officers on the street and remove foreign criminals as soon as they commit crimes. Meanwhile, Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch says taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for a mess at a London council. Westminster City Council awarded a contract to a building firm despite warnings about its poor performance and bankruptcy risks. The company later went bust, leaving taxpayers with a bill of almost £30 million. The authority says it followed a robust process, but the lessons have been learned. Armed police in Sydney have detained seven men after receiving reports a violent act was possibly being planned. Officers say they've not identified a link to the Bondi terrorist attack. And European leaders have been meeting to make a decision on using frozen Russian assets to help Ukraine. Belgium, where the bulk of the assets are held, has so far opposed the plan over concerns about Moscow's response. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up, was unchanged at 97.75. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather mostly cloudy and windy, heavy and persistent rain for many moving in from the south. This will reach northern Scotland in the late afternoon, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you if you are just joining us here at LBC. It won't be cheerful listening, I'm afraid, for the next 3 hours, but it's important that we talk about violence against women and girls, not least because I think for the first time, a serious attempt, not a perfect attempt, but a serious attempt is being made in Parliament, in government, to do something more, something different even on a number of fronts about it. There's an awful lot to consider, whether it's children in school, whether it's how boys are being raised, what their influences are, or whether it's the pre-existing violence in the adult world that we know so much about already, and the gaps in services in relation to that that we know so much about already. There's a heck of a lot to talk about. Broadly speaking, and we'll hear what Jess Phillips, the minister responsible for the announcement, said in the Commons. We'll hear her statement in just a few minutes. But broadly speaking, there's a heavy focus on boys and protecting girls, but boys and education. And that's important because if you can nip this stuff in the bud, educate, form boys in a way that leads them to be less or not misogynistic at all, that would be a result. But there's also concrete financial input as well on, for example, safe housing for women fleeing domestic abuse and £500 million for victims of violence against women and girls, and that will involve various different projects. But the focus on young people is a big part of this, and it will be a big part of our discussion as well. Your thoughts on it, your thoughts on what the government is announcing, your thoughts on what needs to be done to tackle violence against women and girls wherever we find it, because we know from many conversations that we've had before that this is a this is a deeply embedded form of behaviour in our society. It can't be left to government to fix it. It can't be left to teachers to fix it. Parents can't do it on their own. It's a whole society job, really. If you're a half-decent, upstanding citizen, whether it's your children or not, whether it's somebody you know or not, whether it's an attack on you or not, I do think if you want society to improve, you have to do your bit to improve it, however you can, it seems to me. But we will focus on this announcement today, what the government has said, and I very much appreciate your thoughts. And at three, I'll be joined by three women who, for reasons of very different forms of violence that they experienced, have gone on to be very effective campaigners against violence when it's directed towards women and girls. They'll join us and they'll take your calls as well on 0345 6060 973. But before all of that, I'm joined by Nicole Jacobs, Domestic Abuse Commissioner for England and Wales. Good afternoon to you, Nicole Jacobs.
Good afternoon.
Brief response to what you've heard so far from Jess Phillips and the government?
Sheila, I thought you put it really well in your introduction in terms of what we've got here, which is an incredible opportunity that the government is undertaking such a huge ambition, really focused on prevention, that early intervention, you know, holding it. It's the kind of level of activity that so many of us have wanted to see for years and years. So that is absolutely the kind of, in a way, the top line exciting thing to hold on to.
You can see a new seriousness here, can you, and a new intent?
I absolutely can see that. And I think the way you characterized it and why that's so different is so important. Of course, I wouldn't be the commissioner if I didn't say what I think we've got to do or be cautious about. And one of my real concerns is funding, essentially. I know, you know, you mentioned funding for services is kind of cited in the strategy. But one thing that concerns me is that is very much existing funding. And it is the funding that goes through police and crime commissioners currently, at least for the next 2 years, to all victims of crime in terms of services. So it's not necessarily as targeted as it sounds. It's over multiple years.
All victims of all types of crime.
That's right.
I see.
It essentially, from what I've been able to look at the strategy, and there's an accompanying action plan, and there is, it essentially brings us a lot to the current state of play in terms of victim services. And my concern is mainly the more this strategy is successful, so you're in schools, talking to students. Some of those students, of course, are growing up subject to domestic abuse themselves. If you're doing so much in healthcare settings, all of that whole systems and whole society approach that you're describing is in the strategy. Inevitably, we know we will need